Welcome. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Clerk, call the roll, please.
Commissioner Ohtajian. Commissioner Blank.
Here.
Commissioner Burke.
Here.
Commissioner Riley.
Here.
Commissioner Clark.
Here.
Commissioner Schallenberger. Commissioner Wan.
Here.
Commissioner Baird.
Here.
Vice Chair Neely.
Here.
Chair Kruer.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. With that, I'll go to Dr. Lester to go over any announcements or procedure on today's hearing.
Good morning, Chairman Kruer and Commissioners. The first thing I'd like to do is go over two changes to your agenda. On page 17, item 7A is postponed, and item 8A is withdrawn. And there's one further change we would recommend, given concerns for the later items today, which was to reverse the order and trail the energy items until after the North Coast, which is just one item, essentially.
That's fine. I don't think any of my colleagues have a problem with that. So,
for members of the public who are here today and that may wish to speak to an item, you do need to fill out a speaker slip, which you can find in the table outside the hearing room. Also, if you have a cell phone, if you could please turn it off or take it outside so that it doesn't interrupt with the public hearing. So,
you want to go to North Coast?
Yeah, that would bring us to the North Coast District, and in your packet, should have two de minimis waivers that are being reported by the North Coast this month. We're not aware of any objections to those waivers and would recommend concurrence.
Any objection to finding concurrence? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
The other North Coast item today is revised findings on 9A. This was an appeal in Mendocino County. The commission granted a permit with conditions to construct a carport attached to a single-family home and legalize other development associated with this. There is an addendum in your packet that is responding to concerns of the applicant with the revised findings. As you know, with revised findings, the question in front of the commission is whether or not the findings adequately and accurately reflect the commission's action. We believe that with the revised findings as addended, and in particular with changes to the requirements on the roof design of the carport, that this revised finding reflects accurately the Commission's intent to protect visual resources associated with this item. The changes in the proposed findings are shown in underline and strikeout, and I'm available for questions about those changes. The main two issues were, in fact, protection of views through the area of the proposed carport construction, which the commission found could be adequately protected by using a carport as opposed to an enclosed garage area, as well as some tree trimming and limbing in the view shed, and we believe that the findings now reflect the intent of the commission's action on that. That concludes the staff presentation.
Okay. With that, I'll come back to the commission. Are there any ex parte starting on my left? No ex parties. And with that, no speaker slips, correct? No speaker slips. Do those commissioners that are eligible to vote, Cajun, Commissioner Blank, Commissioner Clark, Commissioner Waso, Commissioner Secord, Commissioner Neely, Commissioner Potter, Commissioner Riley, Commissioner Schallenberg, Commissioner Wan, and Commissioner Kruer, could I have a motion?
So moved. Approval of staff's recommendation.
It's been moved, the findings, the staff recommendation, and seconded by Commissioner Wan. The maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Would all those people that are eligible to vote on this matter raise their right hand to support the findings? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 0. It's unanimous. Okay. Okay, with that, then we'll move back to 3.
Good morning, Commissioners. Item 3 is a non-voting item. It's our monthly negative determinations report. There was only one item this month. And unless there are any commissioner comments, we'll move to the first public hearing item for federal consistency matters.
Any objection to finding concurrence? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
Okay, the first public hearing item will be presented by Cassidy Teufel.
Good morning, commissioners. This consistency determination is for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's proposed updates to the management plan for the Cordell Bank National Marine Sanctuary. Commission staff recommends that the commission concur with this consistency determination. The Cordell Bank National Marine Sanctuary includes approximately 400 square nautical miles of federal ocean waters surrounding Cordell Bank, a large underwater seamount located on the edge of the continental shelf about 18 miles offshore of Point Reyes and Marin and Sonoma counties. If I could have the slide for this. This slide, when it comes up, will just give you a brief idea of the location of the Cordell Bank National Marine Sanctuary. The management plan and regulatory revisions described within NOAA's proposal represent the first significant update of the sanctuary management plan and regulations since their original adoption in the late 1980s. NOAA's goals are to update the portions of the sanctuary's management plan and regulations that are outdated and to address new threats to sanctuary resources that have arisen in recent decades. Accordingly, new regulations are proposed that would protect the unique and fragile seabed habitat on and around Cordell Bank and would prohibit taking or possessing any marine mammal, seabird, or sea turtle within the sanctuary. New regulations have also been proposed that would enhance water quality within the sanctuary by prohibiting the deposition of any material that injures sanctuary resources, as well as the discharge of most types of waste material from vessels. The biological productivity of the sanctuary's ecosystems and marine populations would also be further protected by a new regulation prohibiting the release of introduced species within the sanctuary. According to NOAA, no significant unavoidable impacts would occur as a result of the proposed actions. Commission staff agrees and believes that implementation of the updated management plan will eliminate adverse effects on water quality while enhancing marine resource protections consistent with the water quality and marine resource policies of the Coastal Act. In addition, the plan will not adversely affect recreation, public access, or fishing activities within the sanctuary. Therefore, Commission staff recommends that the Commission concur with consistency determination number CD00907. The motion for this item can be found on page 10 of the staff report.
Starting on my left, no ex parties. Okay. Yes. Mr. Baird.
Yes, I do have some ex partes to report. Representing the Secretary for Resources, I've met with William Duros and various members of his staff on multiple occasions over the past couple of years. I've also been present at several workshops in the early phases of this project. During these meetings with sanctuary staff, we discussed comments that have come in from our state agencies. Some of those comments addressed regulations regarding attracting or approaching white sharks. In the Gulf of the Farallones National Marine Sanctuary, we have resolved all of those to our satisfaction. Motorized personal watercraft in the Gulf of the Farallones and Monterey Bay, there were concerns raised by the Department of Boating and Waterways. We met and resolved those issues. There were some issues regarding vessel discharges in both of those sanctuaries. Again, we met and discussed those issues. There was clarification regarding terms for traditional fishing operations being replaced with the term lawful fishing, a concern of the Department of Fish and Game. That concern has been dealt with. And there is an issue, a general issue, to the overall sanctuary prohibition and the use of introduced.
You're not on the microphone.
And finally, there was a general issue with regard to the overall prohibition on the use of introduced species in the sanctuary and its effect on state sovereignty and the exercise of state law within state waters and fisheries management. That one continues to be an issue for us. Yesterday, I had a further phone conversation with Mr. Duros on the issue of introduced species. We discussed the importance of the issue and our mutual concern, both from the state of California and from the standpoint of the sanctuary, about introduced species and basically our disagreement with, I guess, regarding the best way to deal with that, via federal regulation or the use of the extensive state processes which we have at our disposal. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Commissioner Barron. And with that, I'll open the public hearing and first call on Bill Duros. Sir, how much time are you requesting?
Mr. Chairman, I'll probably need 3 or 4 minutes of these introductory remarks, if that's okay.
That's fine. 4 minutes, sir.
Thank you. My name is Bill Duros. I'm the West Coast Regional Director for the National Marine Sanctuary Program. We have 4 of the 14 National Marine Sanctuaries in the country are in the state of California. I have with me today Dan Howard, the superintendent of Cordell Bank Sanctuary, and the chair of the Sanctuary Advisory Council, Tom Lambert, Maria Brown, who's the superintendent for the Gulf of the Farallon Sanctuary, Paul Michelle, who's the superintendent for the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, and a number of our staff as well. And I point that out because this is a very important meeting and hearing for us. It culminates 6 years' worth of work in revising and updating the management plans for these three National Marine Sanctuaries. This first one, obviously, is regarding Cordell Bank, but I thought I would make my overall remarks at this point in time because they're germane to all three of these sanctuaries. We've handled these reviews jointly because the three sanctuaries, as you saw from the map, are all contiguous. Many of the marine users are also the same or share information and partnerships. So we've been at this involving thousands of hours of public time. Hundreds and hundreds of people have volunteered their efforts to help us draft management plan actions and strategies as well as these regulations. We've had over 100 meetings with public members as well as our own sanctuary advisory councils. And so this is the final public step for us along the way. These sanctuaries protect incredibly diverse marine resources and also are critical areas for many human uses, for fishermen, for scientists, for kayakers and divers, whale watchers, and the public who enjoy passive recreation along the beaches. These are critical areas, important areas to the state of California as well as to the National Marine Sanctuary Program. They are federally designated because of their significance. Along the way through this management plan review process, we have been considering hundreds of issues and have narrowed those down for these three sites to probably about 40 critical issues that are essential to protect long-term and to also help us understand and wisely use these sanctuaries for the next 10 years. All in all, what you have before you, both on Cordell Bank and all the sanctuaries, is a very thorough, very professional, very detailed staff analysis. We compliment the staff for their review. They've quickly grasped the issues that are associated with that. We are in favor of the staff recommendations, and I'll come up and talk more briefly on each of the sanctuaries. But for the Cordell Bank Sanctuary, the staff has identified no issues related to that, and we concur with the recommendations for Cordell Bank. And I'd like to, at this time, I'll stop, see if there's any questions at Cordell Bank, and I'd like to come up for each of these other ones.
Mr. Duros, we'll reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal time for you if you wish, okay? John Jurgeritz from Fish and Game? And how much time are you requesting, sir?
3 to 5 minutes is fine. Four would be plenty.
Okay. How about 4 minutes then?
That's great. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. John Ugaretz with the California Department of Fish and Game's Marine Region. I am the Marine Region's Habitat Conservation Program Manager. I wanted to preface my remarks as well that these remarks apply to all three sanctuaries' proposed regulations, and rather than waste your time making the same comment over and over again, I'll make it now, but do want you to understand that it applies to all three.
Gotcha.
The State of California and National Marine Sanctuary Program are working more closely together now than we ever have in the past. We have resolved many of our issues with their proposed regulations and have cooperative agreements with sanctuaries throughout California and a very good working relationship. We have extensively discussed the proposed regulations with the sanctuary and resolved most of the issues that we have presented to the sanctuaries. Key to these discussions is the scope of the prohibition on releasing or introducing invasive or non-native species contained in all three sanctuaries' proposed regulations. While the department fully agrees that invasive species are a significant threat to native habitats and living resources in California, we disagree with both the sanctuary's proposed regulations and the Coastal Commission staff's conclusions. The proposed regulations unnecessarily curtail and supersede the state's authority to manage living resources within state waters and to permit aquaculture and mariculture on an ongoing basis. Sanctuary regulations should focus only on illegal introduction of species into sanctuary waters and not place limitations on the state of California's right to manage living resources. Coastal Commission staff indicate the sanctuary's July 2007 proposed revisions to the originally proposed regulations decrease the intended protections. However, the department asserts that the proposal does not go far enough in providing for practical application of the rule and in acknowledging the state of California's existing management authority. The California Fish and Game Commission has legislated authority to manage aquaculture in state waters. California has additional aquaculture and mariculture permitting and review processes in place, including but not limited to Coastal Commission permitting and the California Environmental Quality Act that provide for significant protection to our marine habitats and resources. In addition to Fish and Game Commission and Coastal Commission permitting, new leases for aquaculture face review by the United States Army Corps of Engineers, NOAA Fisheries, and the California Department of Health Services. Any future proposed introduction through mariculture or other means would face complete review under these processes and allow for comment by the National Marine Sanctuary Program. These existing protections do not need to be supplemented with or replaced by sanctuary regulations in contravention to state rights. The Department of Fish and Game and State of California have provided proposed edits to the sanctuary regulations. The proposed edits provide for the release of any species captured during lawful fishing activity, not arbitrarily limiting the release to striped bass. Additionally, our edits allow for species cultivated by mariculture that have been approved under the various authorities of the state of California. If new species not currently under permit for mariculture were proposed, the existing California Environmental Quality Act, California Coastal Commission, Department of Fish and Game, and Fish and Game Commission review processes would ensure the protection of our native resources. As such, we respectfully request that the Coastal Commission supports the Department's comments to the National Marine Sanctuaries Program and include in your consistency determination a condition that requests the changes outlined in the document we've provided to the Coastal Commission staff and as proposed to the Coordell Banks, Gulf of the Farallones, and Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuaries. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Caitlin Gaffney. Good morning.
Caitlin Gaffney with Ocean Conservancy, and I will just speak once, but my comments apply to all three of the sanctuary consistency determinations. I work out of an Ocean Conservancy office in Santa Cruz, California, and for the last several years have represented the conservation community on the Sanctuary Advisory Council for the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, and have been very involved for the last several years in this joint management plan review process that you've heard about. So I've attended literally dozens of meetings, hundreds of hours, served on committees, et cetera. It was a very extensive public process, as you've heard already. There were many controversial issues raised, and frankly, this was not one of them. The idea of prohibiting introduction of non-native species in sanctuary waters, that was something that everybody could get on board with, the fishermen, the conservation community. This was really a huge issue of concern across the board, and one that the public demanded the sanctuary take action on. So I'm a little surprised to be here today hearing from the state of California that essentially Fish and Game doesn't want the sanctuary to institute this prohibition. It has huge support from the public, from the communities along sanctuary shores, and had significant support in the public process. The threats to coastal resources and sanctuary resources from introduction of non-native species are well known, incredibly obvious here in the San Francisco Bay. This is a huge and significant problem. I would hope that the state of California and the federal government would be partners in this, look to each other's strengths, and try to work together to provide as much protection as possible, as opposed to seeing this as some kind of sovereignty or jurisdictional issue. I would hope that the focus could be moving forward on how both the state and federal government can complement each other, work together, and provide the protection that the public wants and that the resources need. So I strongly support the staff recommendation. I think that the additional condition, bringing us back to where we started with a prohibition on introduction of these damaging non-native species, is exactly where we need to be, and that the state and the feds should figure out a way to work together towards their shared goals of resource protection and reducing the threats of introduced species. So I'm supporting your staff recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Kathy Fossmark. Three minutes, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
My name is Kathy Fossmark, and I represent the Alliance of Communities for Sustainable Fisheries. We're a group of recreational and commercial fishermen from Port San Luis to Half Moon Bay, organizations both recreational, commercial, cities, and harbor districts, as well as ports. My purpose today is to comment on all three of the sanctuary constituents. Are you able to hear me?
Can we hold on? I apologize. Could everybody please check and make sure their cell phone shut off? An iPod? Whatever. Blackberries? Anything? Any phone? Thank you, ma'am. You go ahead. That's difficult, I know. Go ahead.
I am commenting on all three of the sanctuary recommendations here today. One of the concerns that first of all, I should let you know that I'm from a fishing family, and we fish the whole West Coast and over the last 50 years. And I want to mention that in the Sanctuary Act, it does not require that they use good science to make their determinations. With regard to cruise ship discharge, fishing boats, small vessels that don't have holding tanks at this time, and for the safety purposes of when they have to pump out, say, if they're sinking or have a problem, that could be a problem for them. And the personal watercraft issue. I think it's important to remember that when you don't have good science making your choices, it creates a problem in how the outcome and what you decide to do and how you develop your regulations. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay, with that, we'll go back to Mr. Duros.
Mr. Chairman, and that this first item is only about Cordell Bank, and I believe the staff is going to make a presentation about Gulf of the Farallones and Monterey Bay.
That's correct.
Some of these comments were brought in scope, and I think it's probably best that you tell me if I hold the specific comments regarding some of these site-specific issues for Farallones and Monterey Bay to those items.
I would.
Okay, so for Cordell Bank, I don't believe any of the comments that you've heard raise any concerns or objections to what they have before them. Cordell Bank is entirely in federal waters. The concerns that were expressed by the state don't apply in federal waters. And so unless there's questions you have, I'd leave it at that. I believe that we've adequately, over these countless hearings and meetings, our advisory councils as well, address these issues. Your staff has analyzed it thoroughly and recommends no changes, and we're satisfied with that recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Duros. With that, I'll go back to staff and for their comments. Mr. Delaplane.
No, just to reiterate the same point, the items about invasive species are not for this first item. They're for the next two, and we'll address those further in our presentation on those items.
Okay. Thank you very much. And with that, I'll come back to commission. Commissioner Wan.
I move that the commission concur with consistency determination CD00907. That's this one, right? Okay.
Yes.
That the project described therein is fully consistent and thus is consistent to the maximum extent practicable with the enforceable policies of the California Coastal Management Program, and ask for a yes vote.
Second. Been moved by Commissioner Wan and seconded by Commissioner Riley. Both the maker and seconder of the motion are asking for a yes vote, and passage of this motion will result in the concurrence with the determination and adoption of the resolutions and findings as contained in this staff report. Commissioner Wan, would you like to speak to your motion?
No, I have some comments on the other one, but not on this.
Commissioner Riley.
Hello.
Vice Chair Neely. Is there somebody else that had their hand up? I'm sorry, Commissioner Baird.
Yes. I'd like to speak to the comments that were put forth by the Department of Fish and Game. But first, to precede those, just to say that we have worked with the sanctuary program, all of the various sanctuaries, for years. We have a fantastic working relationship, and I think the fact that we've gone through 6 years of this and come down to the one issue that I want to address is a true testament to the hard work that all of these people do, and to the partnership that we have from the standpoint of the people in the field right up to the Secretary for Resources. But I would like to say that with regard to this introduced species issue, the Department of Fish and Game and the Secretary, all of us concur that this is a significant issue. We concur with the problems that introduced species can pose, particularly when they become invasive and get out into the environment. The issue that has come before you this morning is a simple one. In state waters, the department the Fish and Game Commission is the primary state entity that deals with the regulation of fisheries in state waters. The position that is being taken by the Department of Fish and Game and supported by the Secretary is that we believe that should be governed under state rules and regulations and existing state process. Now, if you were to go with the recommended language by the Department of Fish and Game, what that means, in essence, is that you would have this prohibition language in the sanctuary regulations, but it would say that unless there was a permit or authorization by the Fish and Game Commission. In effect, if there is any proposal in the future for a new introduced species in the sanctuary, it would go to the Fish and Game Commission, but it would also go through CEQA. It would also come back to this commission, where this commission could object to that activity. So in terms of that particular issue, keeping it within the state rules and regulations and existing processes within the state, there's also several federal authorities that come into play, we believe is the way to go. This is an issue for the Secretary of State sovereignty and a feeling that they do not want to see the regulation of fisheries in the state of California regulated out beyond the jurisdiction of our state entities. So,
Commissioner Baird, I thought the speaker said that this was in federal waters, not state waters. The other ones might be in state waters, but this one was clearly in federal waters on this first one. I thought that was my understanding. I don't know if you want to make this point until the next one, but from the testimony, I was very clear from what staff said and everything that this is clearly in federal waters.
Yep. Comment noted. Mr. Ugritz, I assume we are strictly dealing with the state waters portion.
In case of this sanctuary, the important part of our comment is in regard to release of only striped bass in lawful fishing. It is possible that someone lawfully fishing in the Cordell Banks National Marine Sanctuary would catch another type of already introduced species and release it. The existing regulations by the sanctuary would make that activity illegal. And so because the sanctuary has provided a joint management plan, obviously we're making our comments broadly on all three. In the case of Cordell Banks, the issue is less with regards to permitted aquaculture in state waters and more with regards to their sole exemption of striped bass for release during lawful fishing activities. We simply suggest they remove the word striped bass and make that. I think
we're just trying to find out if this is in federal waters or state waters.
It is in federal waters. The state of California does regulate fishing in federal waters when the species is not controlled by a federal fishery management plan.
Okay.
So just to modify my comments, yes, indeed, my comments with regard to the state waters refer to the other sanctuary issues, but I would state that in this language that was proposed, it is the 10A language, and certainly the Secretary and the Resources Agency are in support of that change.
Commissioner Wan and Vice Chair Neely.
Yeah, in that case, I will talk to this issue, but before I do, I think we need to call up Mr. Duros because he reserved his comments on this issue and his rebuttal on this issue for the next permit, and I suspect that he has something to say about this as well. Mr. Duros? And then I'll give my comments on it.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Ugretz does then clarify it in that we've been talking to them quite extensively about issues. We hadn't understood that it was a concern regarding Cordell Bank as well and that it's in federal waters. Obviously, the issues that have been raised about sovereignty aren't relevant here. It's rather an issue of suggestion as to how we ought to structure this particular condition. And so, overall, and it's been stated by several of the speakers, Mr. Baird, Mr. Ugretz, the Coastal Commission staff, this issue of introduced species, non-native species, is a gigantic problem that all ecosystems face. We certainly face it here in California, no place more so than in San Francisco Bay and in this area. There are countless state programs, there are countless federal programs that are all aimed at the same target, which is to reduce the introduction, and when introduced, to reduce the spread of introduced species. That's both marine-related species as well as freshwater. In the state of California, Department of Fish and Game is involved on many fronts trying to curb the further spread of invasive species. So our focus has been with this regulation on what seem to be practical, real exemptions that we face today. Striped bass is a fishery. We acknowledge that's a non-native species for which there are there's size limits, so there are fishermen that catch and release these fish, and we don't want to have a problem where a fisherman's fearful that if he releases a fish while meeting a fish and game law, he's going to violate a sanctuary regulation. But that's the only fishery today. We've been working with the state on this particular issue for about 4 years, and this very specific question of what should be allowed for catch and release. What we have said is that if in the future there develops another fishery, they can come back and request that we amend our regulation, and we will consider it at that time. But we, like many other agencies, state and federal, are trying to draw the line as clearly and brightly as possible about what the expectations are regarding introduced species. And I believe we've done that. As Ms. Gaffney said, it was a major issue from the public, one for which there was no pushback on any aspects of this, certainly not on the catch and release only exempting striped bass at Cordell Bank. So in our minds, it's a very prudent measure to put in place that as is consistent with all the other theories regarding designating national marine sanctuaries, where you have activities that might otherwise be prohibited, but they exist, grandfather those in, but don't allow for, through regulations, the spread of other activities that would be prohibited. For instance, ocean outfalls at all of these sanctuaries that exist today, sewage outfalls, are allowed and exempted, but we have regulations that don't allow new sewer outfalls to be constructed. Now, that's a state waters issue, but the state has agreed that that's an appropriate thing for the federal government and the state government to work together on. So our record's very consistent in that regard. Grandfather in what's there that might otherwise be prohibited, but don't allow for wide open interpretations of regulations that could lead to the encouragement, in this case, of someone releasing introduced species or helping to create a fishery.
Thank you, Mr. Duros, for that. Commissioner Wan?
I couldn't agree more with Mr. Duros and with the other speakers who've dealt with this issue. This issue has been dealt with for a long time in public hearings. This commission itself has a long history of concern about invasive species, whether they're on the land or in the ocean. It's inappropriate to say that in this case, in a sanctuary, you can go ahead and do that. I note that, and I'm certainly in agreement with the letter that we have from Senator Simitian, who has been dealing with this at the legislative level with a number of pieces of legislation dealing with invasive species, and who says that the adverse environmental and economic impacts associated with introduced species are well known and well documented, and that he totally supports the sanctuary's position and the Coastal Commission staff's position, and I urge others to do so. One issue that has been raised, and it sort of muddies the water, so to speak, even though this is in federal waters, in relationship to, quote, states' rights. Let me ask our attorneys. We're dealing with these issues both in terms of aquaculture and other ways. Is the commission prohibited from dealing with these issues?
Through the chair, no, the commission is not. Section 30230 of the Coastal Act, authorizes the commission to protect marine resources. Section 30411 of the Coastal Act does address the commission's authority vis-a-vis DFG and the Fish and Game Commission. Section 30411 provides that the commission shall not duplicate or exceed regulatory controls established by DFG with respect to wildlife and fishery management programs that DFG has established. Aquaculture programs, in our interpretation, do not constitute a fishery management program. It's a different kind of thing. And on the basis of the comments that I've heard this morning, it sounds like the white striped bass fishery is the only non-native fishery program that the state has established.
All right, so we have the authority to do this, and I strongly urge my fellow commissioners to take this. This is a very important step towards protecting the resources of the state. I think we all know what invasive species can do to an area.
Thank you, Commissioner Wan. Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to propose an amendment, and that would be to substitute the language proposed by the Department of Fish and Game. And that language revision is in Section 922.82, Section 10A, and instead of it saying striped bass, released during lawful catch and release fishing activities, it would read species released during lawful catch and release fishing activities.
Okay. Is there a second to Vice Chair Neely's motion?
I second that.
Been seconded by Commissioner Akajian. Would you like to speak to your motion, Vice Chair Neely?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I support the staff's recommendation, but I don't think the request from Fish and Game is unreasonable, and I think that we should try to work with these agencies and incorporate their suggestions into our approval.
Commissioner Akajian, would you like to speak to that second?
The very same as Ms. Neely's input.
Okay. Any other? Commissioner Blank?
I just have a question for staff on the proposed amendment. Is this something staff is just violently opposed to or could live with?
Staff is opposed to that modification. We think that it's an important policy consideration that the commission needs to make about invasive species, and we maintain that the recommendation is the appropriate action for this commission.
Thank you for the clarification.
Anyone else? If not, I'll call for the question.
Just one possible informational item, maybe for Mr. Ugaritz. Could you talk about what other species other than striped bass might be subject to this?
The only one I can think of off the top of my head would be there are introduced shad in the San Francisco Bay Delta region that conceivably could be caught in the ocean at Cordell Banks. It's a stretch, but the department's point is that we agree with the sanctuary that introduced species are a problem. Existing introduced species should not become an unreasonable illegal activity for a fisherman on the ocean who catches one accidentally and releases it again into the environment. And that's all we're saying. If it's lawful fishing, it's lawful. It's not introducing a new species.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Duros, did you want to add anything to that to be fair?
To be fair, Mr. Chairman, I think it'd be worth hearing 30 seconds from Dan Howard, who's the superintendent of that site, and no one knows that site and those resources.
We'll allow that because of the last question. Huh.
Yeah, this is just a follow-up comment. One, I think it would be extremely unlikely that you would catch a shad in the Cordell Bank National Marine Sanctuary. It's a coastal estuarine species. It would be extremely unlikely. And I just would like to support what Bill said earlier in that, you know, I don't understand why, other than the striped bass, which is well established, there's a recreational fishery for it, would also be very unlikely to catch a striped bass at Cordell Bank. But I just don't understand why you would want to reintroduce those species back into the environment, you know, if it was one of these exotic or introduced species.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to make one comment. I think I would have to support staff. This is a very important policy issue to prohibit invasive species, and I just can't support the amending motion. I'll call clerk call the roll. They're asking for a yes vote. I'm sorry, Commissioner Riley, did you want to say something, sir?
No, I'm just getting ready to vote.
Okay, thank you.
which motion are we voting
we're
on?
We're voting on the amending motion that allows the fish and game substitute language, and they're asking for a yes vote. So would the clerk call the roll?
Commissioner Blank?
No.
Commissioner Burke?
No.
Commissioner Clark?
No.
Commissioner Wessel? Commissioner Potter?
No.
Commissioner Riley?
No.
Commissioner Schallenberger?
No.
Commissioner Wan?
No.
Commissioner Achajan?
No.
Vice Chair Neely?
Yes.
Chair Crewer?
No. What was the final vote?
110.
Yeah, 110. Thank you, Commissioner Kajian. So it failed, substitute motion, the amending motion, and so with that, we'll move back to the main motion that's on the floor, Commissioner Wan's motion. And again, would the clerk call the roll? She's asking for a yes vote, both the maker and the seconder, on the main motion.
Commissioner Chajan?
No.
Yes.
Commissioner Blank?
Yes.
Commissioner Burke?
Yes.
Commissioner
yes.
Burke?
Yes.
Commissioner Clark?
Yes.
Commissioner Wessel?
Yes.
Commissioner Riley?
Yes.
Commissioner Schallenberger?
Yes.
Commissioner Wan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Neely?
Yes.
Chair Crewer?
Yes. So the main motion passes unanimously.
11-0.
11-0. So the commission hereby concurs with the consistency determination.
I don't remember voting.
Jeff?
Okay, let's...
Commissioner Potter?
Hi.
Way to swing that vote, Dave. Thank you for that. I appreciate that this morning. Yeah. So with that, the commission unanimously now, with Commissioner Potter, hereby concurs with the consistency determination, CD-009-07, by the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. Okay? We'll go next, Mr. Delaplane, to 4B.
Yes, Mr. Teufel will give a joint presentation for 4B and 4C.
Thanks, Mark. Because there's a fair degree of overlap, our next presentation will be a joint one addressing NOAA's consistency determinations for both the Gulf of the Farallones and Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary Management Plan revisions. The staff recommends that the Commission conditionally concur with each of these consistency determinations. If I could have that figure brought up again. As this figure demonstrates, Gulf of the Farallones National Marine Sanctuary is comprised of nearly 1,000 square nautical miles of federal and state waters to the west and northwest of San Francisco and surrounding the Farallon Islands. Continuing from the southern and eastern borders of the Gulf of the Farallones, Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary stretches from Marin County in the north to San Luis Obispo County in the south and includes approximately 300 miles of shoreline and over 5,000 square miles of nearshore and offshore ocean waters. Similar to the previous item concerning Cordell Bank National Marine Sanctuary, NOAA is also proposing management plan and regulatory revisions for these sanctuaries. The proposed revisions represent the first substantial update that either sanctuary's management plan has undergone since its original adoption and are intended to reflect advances in scientific understanding and to address management of current and future potential threats to the resources of these sanctuaries. We will start with the changes proposed for the Farallon Sanctuary. This sanctuary's proposed new and revised regulations include several measures to protect and enhance the sanctuary's biological resources. For example, through prohibiting anchoring within seagrass protection zones in Tumalas Bay, prohibiting attracting or approaching great white sharks, and taking or possessing marine mammals, seabirds, or sea turtles. To protect water quality and biological productivity, NOAA is also proposing to increase the scope of regulations on discharges to include vessel waste and other harmful materials. These proposed regulations arose after over 5 years of public scoping and issue identification in coordination with agencies, experts, the Sanctuary Advisory Council, and members of the public, and have been met with widespread approval by the majority of these stakeholders. For most regulations, a consensus was arrived at. However, for one of NOAA's proposed regulations, it was not. In the draft management plan and draft environmental impact statement prepared by NOAA, a regulation was proposed that would have prohibited the release of introduced species into the sanctuary. This regulation included exemptions for existing introduced species aquaculture operations in Tumalas Bay if maintained at current levels and striped bass released during catch and release fishing. While this regulation was crafted in response to the well-recognized threat to native marine species and ecosystems posed by introduced species and was proposed to address a substantial regulatory gap in the existing management plan, the Department of Fish and Game and Resources Agency encouraged NOAA to propose a less restrictive regulation. In response, NOAA amended the introduced species regulation included in its consistency determination submittal to allow existing introduced species aquaculture operations in Tumalas Bay to expand to full build-out or maximum potential production levels. The staff has been unable to determine the quantitative limit of the expansion of operations allowed under this proposed regulation, but it can be assumed to refer to an increase beyond current production levels. The staff questions whether such an expansion of non-native species production within the sanctuary is consistent with not only the Coastal Act marine resource protection policies, but also with the overall intention of recent legislation, such as SB 497, referred to today, and the continuing invasive species monitoring, education, and eradication efforts of dedicated staff at agencies and organizations, including the California Department of Fish and Game, Office of Spill Prevention Response, and the California State Land Commission's Ballast Water Program. Accordingly, the condition included in the Commission's staff recommendation mirrors the introduced species regulation originally proposed by NOAA in the Project Draft EIS as the most comprehensive and protective of sanctuary resources. Adoption of this condition would specify that NOAA include this more protective regulation in their new management plan for Gulf of the Farallons. Next, we will discuss a few of the key issues for the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary's proposed management plan update. NOAA's proposed new and revised regulations for this sanctuary would result in the expansion of the sanctuary to include the 775-square-mile Davidson Seamount Management Zone and would increase protection for this area's benthic resources. In addition, new regulations on discharging or depositing material within sanctuary waters, abandoning vessels, altering the seabed, and attracting great white sharks would benefit marine resources and water quality both inside and around the sanctuary. To increase regulatory consistency among the California sanctuaries and address one of the common threats to the crucial biological resources that these areas contain, in the draft environmental impact statement and draft management plan, NOAA also proposed a regulation which would have prohibited the release of introduced species within the Monterey Bay Sanctuary, except for striped bass released during catch and release fishing. As discussed previously, at the request of the Department of Fish and Game and the Resource Agency, NOAA has revised this regulation and proposed a new regulation that includes a process whereby the National Marine Sanctuary Program Director can authorize any approval, permit, or lease issued by the State of California in the Monterey Sanctuary. This regulation would facilitate non-native aquaculture activity in the sanctuary by enabling joint review and approval of these operations. For similar reasons as those discussed above for the Farallon Sanctuary, the staff recommends that the Commission adopt a condition which mirrors the regulation originally proposed and analyzed by NOAA in the draft EIS for this project. This condition would prohibit the release of introduced species in the sanctuary except for striped bass released during catch and release fishing. Commission staff is also aware that another of the proposed regulations proposed by NOAA for the Monterey Sanctuary has raised concerns for a variety of sanctuary users. Although the original 1992 Sanctuary Management Plan included a regulation intended to prohibit all motorized personal watercraft from operating in the sanctuary outside of four designated use zones, the definition of motorized personal watercraft included in this definition was not broad enough to apply to some of the larger, more modern classes of watercraft currently available. The result of this loophole has been that these classes of watercraft can currently be used throughout the entire sanctuary. NOAA's proposed management plan update would close this loophole by revising the definition of motorized personal watercraft to apply to these larger classes of vessels. In addition, NOAA is proposing to designate a fifth watercraft use zone. This new zone would be located near Pillar Point in Half Moon Bay, surrounding the location of the Maverick surf break. Because the intention of this zone would be to allow big wave watercraft-assisted tow-in surfing to continue at this unique location, it would only be available to watercraft users during periods when NOAA's National Weather Service has issued a high surf warning between December 1st and February 28th. The designation of this zone would not restrict its use by other recreational users, including traditional paddle surfers. NOAA is also proposing to develop a permit process to allow the use of watercraft as support vessels in this zone at Mavericks during an annual commercially sponsored surfing competition. Although this watercraft use zone would be located roughly 200 to 300 meters offshore, the waters and shoreline around this area support both the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve and substantial populations of harbor seals and seabirds. Due to the small area of this proposed watercraft use zone and the fact that it would only be available for an estimated 0 to 10 days per year on average, the staff believes that the potential for watercraft use in this area to adversely affect marine resources is small, and that the proposal represents a reasonable balancing of habitat protection and recreation needs. In summary, Commission staff recommends a conditional concurrence with NOAA's proposed management plan updates for the Farallones and Monterey sanctuaries. The Commission will need two motions and votes. Motions can be found on page 13 of the staff report for the Farallon Sanctuary and page 9 of the staff report for the Monterey Sanctuary. Thank you. That concludes my comments.
Thank you. Any ex parte starting on my left? Commissioner Potter?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a brief conversation Monday morning with Cassie Fosmark regarding her concerns about the overregulation of the fishing industry.
Thank you, Commissioner Potter. Anyone else on this item? Commissioner Blank.
I had an email dialogue with Gary Strachan, who's the head ranger at Ananuevo State Park, concerning jet skis and Zodiacs for both surfing and access to Ananuevo Island. And I'll be asking staff questions about that later.
Thank you, Commissioner Blank. Commissioner Baird?
I had the same ex parte communications I reported on the previous CD-00707. Exactly.
Okay. Thank you very much. And with that, I'll open the public hearing. And Mr. Bill Duros? Sir, how much time are you requesting on this item?
5 minutes, please.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. As I noted earlier, I made some opening general remarks regarding overall our approach on these management plan review processes. And again, your staff has done an excellent job of summarizing what the issues are. So I'm not going to spend a great deal of detail honing in on those because they did describe those in considerable detail. As Brian Baird said, and as John Ugaritz has said also, we have a very good working relationship with the Resources Agency, as well as the many departments of the Resources Agency, Coastal Commission being at the top of that list, State Parks, Department of Fish and Game, the State Lands Commission. We largely see the eye to eye on 99.9% of all issues that we're dealing with jointly. As can happen in close and shared partnerships, there can be times when the two parties in the end, after working very hard to try to find a solution, agree that they just can't find a solution that they both agree on. And that's where we're at with regards to this introduced species issue. As has been said, probably more clearly than ever, for our perspective, the state and the sanctuary do agree on the need and benefit and purpose of prohibiting the introduction of introduced species. Whether or not the state, Fish and Game, is willing to or can say that they're not going to ever issue any aquaculture projects at this time, they can't, we haven't asked them to do that as well, because that's a decision that actually lies with the Fish and Game Commission. But for the Gulf of the Farallones, as the staff has said, it boils down to where we're at after dealing with a myriad of issues over many years involving many, many stakeholders. We're now down to really the final issue, not to say that there aren't some things that people might disagree on, but that we've certainly provided ample opportunity and have benefited from the public input we've received. But the question is, in Tomales Bay, where there already is considerable aquaculture projects, shellfish aquaculture, including introduced species aquaculture projects, should that be allowed to expand for introduced species beyond the current footprint, or is the current footprint adequate at this time? Our regulations, and none of this discussion, just to make sure you're clear, has anything to do with non-native aquaculture. Native species aquaculture. Boy, that was a Freudian slip if there ever was one. It's native aquaculture that could expand within whatever rules that the state chooses to impose on those, and we're not trying to limit that. It's these introduced species, these non-native species, of which there's anywhere between 9 and 11 species there now. We've, I think, agreed, or at least have agreement of the mind, that that ought to be capped at that number. And as we were proposing to them during the dialogue over the last couple of months, we're willing to consider allowing that to expand to the existing leased areas. Not that these applicants have expanded that far. It'd be they're at, we estimate, 20% to 30%, and so that might be a 70% to 80% growth. We recognize that's quite a bit of growth. There's certainly not an economic hardship in our mind from allowing that much expansion of the non-native species, as long as they don't have new non-native species, new introduced species. So that's where we're at. The staff has recommended that we go back to what we originally proposed, and by and large, we're okay with that recommendation. We haven't studied the legal nuances entirely, and our legal counsel back in D.C. Has just identified they need to assess that more. Is there a takings issue or not? We don't think there are, but we want to at least let you know. We still have to study that to the end. There's also this broader question of introduced species regulation for the Gulf of the Farallones beyond just the aquaculture that exists in Tomales Bay. For the Monterey Bay Sanctuary, that issue exists as well. This broader question of should we cap and limit introduced species that can be released to that which is caught in the one fishery that exists, striped bass. They do catch those in the Monterey Bay and the Gulf of the Farallones Sanctuary. And so I've said what I think I need to say on that. It's a critical issue. We've been working with many different parties. Many different agencies have taken this position up themselves. And this one question that's out there that the State Department of Fish and Game has raised is one that I need to address, and that's this question of sovereignty. Should the state have the sole and exclusive say in the state waters of a federally designated National Marine Sanctuary? And I remind the Commission that all these National Marine Sanctuaries that are in state waters include rules that affect state activities. For instance, we have a regulation that prohibits oil and gas development, not just in federal waters, but in state waters. Now, the State Lands Commission holds the authority, like the Fish and Game Commission, to decide whether or not that's a good rule or not. They have said that's a good rule. We accept that. It's okay that the federal government has an overlying jurisdiction, and our jurisdictions are compatible. Same for numerous water quality restrictions that we have. We've also got overlapping permit jurisdiction with the Coastal Commission that we exercise jointly on a number of matters. And so if at any point in time an agency felt like, well, we want to be the sole decider, not you, we wouldn't have national marine sanctuaries in federal waters, in state waters, I'm sorry, because the state would just always occupy that field. And this broader ecosystem protection that's envisioned, this broader intergovernmental relationship that's envisioned with national marine sanctuaries, would evaporate back to the federal waters line. That wasn't what was envisioned in 92 when we were designated. That's not what's envisioned with the National Marine Sanctuaries Act. This opportunity for a dialogue with state agencies, like through the consistency certification and other reviews that the state's provided, is meant to be insurance so that we can try to find the best solution. So on that one particular issue, while I grant you that they feel as if the Fish and Game Commission is the main decider of that, you know, the Coastal Commission also decides an introduced species aquaculture project. So does the State Lands Commission. And in this case, we're saying, since there is no one that's come out and said, let's not have those projects, we're saying that we ought to have those projects. Last point I want to make for Monterey Bay, this issue of motorized personal watercraft. Again, your staff has assessed that and describe that in great detail, very accurately. It is closing of a loophole. There certainly have been new users in the period of time where the original law was written and the current one that we're trying to close. That's tow-in surfing. We have had considerable discussions with the tow-in surfing industry, with surfers, with surf rider foundations and other organizational groups, with harbor masters. There is no issue about whether or not search and rescue would be impeded by our regulation. That's not the case. It's simply, should we allow one place at Mavericks, which we've proposed, a very creative solution that has come up, or should all wave areas be open to tow and surfing? We don't believe that was the original intent. We believe there will be considerable harm to wildlife by having all areas open. And this is what I do believe with the state we're on the same page on. Let's make sure we have one area, this primary, unique area at Mavericks, where tow and surfing can take place. And we feel like it's a very creative, effective solution that marries the interests of all parties, those that want conservation, along with those that want the opportunity for tow-in surfing. So, again, I have the superintendents here for Monterey Bay and Gulf of the Farallones. I want to point out that Maria Brown, who's the manager for the Gulf of the Farallones, also has, due to geographical reasons, responsibilities for the northern part of the Monterey Bay Sanctuary. So she, as the superintendent for Gulf of the Farallones, may answer questions if you have them on the northern part of the Monterey Bay Sanctuary. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Duros. I'll reserve a couple minutes for rebuttal for you. Okay. John Urogritz, again, from California Fish and Game. And, again, if people could be as concise as possible, we have quite a few speaker slips here on B and C on this joint hearing, and we're just going to run into a time problem here at the end with people's airplanes later. So if people could just do the best they can and not be redundant and say the same thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I, too, have a flight this afternoon to get home. The only comment
How much John time, sir?
1 minute's fine.
Okay, and your name for the record?
John Ugaretz with California Department of Fish and Game. The only comment I would have is with regards to what Mr. Duros just spoke to, the issue is not one of invasive species because the department is not proposing that the sanctuaries remove a prohibition on releasing introduced species into the sanctuaries. We are merely asking that they more correctly identify the state's rights to permit aquaculture in the exemption to that prohibition. So we agree with them. Invasive species are a problem. There are species in California that are introduced through aquaculture that are currently being cultivated. It is conceivable that in the future there would be a request to raise those species in another location outside of Tomales Bay or in an expanded location within Tomales Bay. The Fish and Game Commission and your own commission would hear those proposals and make a judgment as to whether they would have a negative impact on California resources. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Kathy Fossmark. And after her, Caitlin Gaffney. And again, can you, how much time, ma'am?
Just 1 minute, please.
Thank you.
My name is Kathy Fossmark, and I'm here again representing the Alliance of Communities for Sustainable Fisheries.
Can you get the microphone down a little further and speak into it? Thank you.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. The reason I'm here is I want to just point out that in the designation document, originally, for 1992 for the sanctuary for Monterey. There was language here I have referring to the importance and the jurisdiction of the state of California, National Marine Fisheries, and the Pacific Fishery Management Council in regulating fishing and aquaculture and various other items. But I want to point out the exact language. The sanctuary prohibitions may indirectly affect fishing activities have been written to explicitly exempt aquaculture, kelp harvesting, and traditional fishing activities. I wanted to give you that information. I thought it might be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Caitlin Gaffney.
I'll pass because I already spoke to all.
Oh, thank you very much, ma'am. Tim Eichenberg, and then Zeke Grader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
How much time, sir?
Just 1 minute.
Thank you.
I do want to reiterate the comments that Caitlin Gaffney made. My name is Tim Eichenberg. I'm the director of the Pacific Office of the Ocean Conservancy. We agree that the revised management plan regulations generally strengthen the protection of the sanctuaries. but we agree with the staff that the sanctuary resources are not adequately protected on non-native species. California has a ban on non-native fish in state waters, but they don't have a ban on non-native shellfish. Therefore, the sanctuary should take responsibility for banning non-native species. We agree that the existing shellfish operations that are currently in operation should continue. We're not proposing or supporting any curtailing of existing operations, but introducing new species and expanding those existing operations should not be allowed in a national marine sanctuary. So we concur with the staff recommendation.
Thank you, sir. Zeke Grader, Bob Wilson. How much time, sir?
2 minutes. It takes me at least a minute to give my organization's name. thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. My name is Zeke Grader, and I'm with the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations, Incorporated. I'm here to speak in favor of your staff recommendation for the Gulf of the Farallones. I think it's we've had a great relationship the commercial fishing industry has with this sanctuary. They've been very good as far as protecting some of the most important fishing grounds off the West Coast. In particular, we're supportive of the conditions they've placed on invasive species. This is something that we, among other groups, had requested that they include in their new management regulations, and we think it's important to protect against the introduction of new species, new shellfish species, in and around Tomales Bay, the very things the Department of Fish and Game was talking about wanting to do. We don't want to see happen. We already have enough problems with invasive species in this state without having additional problems. I do want to say, however, since you've mixed the two sanctuaries here together, we do have very real concerns about the expansion of the Monterey Bay out to the Davidson Seamount. In fact, if anything, we think that boundary lines between the Gulf of the Farallones and Monterey ought to be changed down to Año Nuevo to more correctly reflect the geographic areas, those two geographic areas of those sanctuaries. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Wilson, and then Steve Shimek. How much time, Mr. Wilson?
3 minutes. My name is Bob Wilson, and I'm here on behalf of the Gulf of the Farallones National Marine Sanctuary Advisory Council. I'm also the board chair of the Farallones Marine Sanctuary Association. Last month, our advisory council sent a resolution to you regarding the invasive species issues, where we said we were concerned that that a specific section that the Gulf had modified but affected the introduction of introduced species. And we resolved that we requested that that we support the adoption of the stronger draft, which had come out in October, and which is the one that your staff recommends as well. And we urge that you make that consistency determination. We disagree with the position of the state of California. It is true they've cooperated, but they've had 6 years to introduce their policy and say it's not appropriate to have aquaculture of introduced species in a federal marine sanctuary. And so their position is say, well, we want to rely on our state's rights, wait for a permit to come up, then decide, and everybody get involved. This is a no-brainer. And the state should have taken that position a long time ago, and now is the time for the Coastal Commission to make the state of California make that determination and avoid all these issues in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Steve Shimek and Sarah Corbin. How much time, sir?
3 minutes.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Steve Shimek, and I'm executive director of the Otter Project and Monterey Coastkeeper. I also serve as an alternate to Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary Sanctuary Advisory Council. I'm also co-chair of the Conservation Working Group. I was the liaison between Monterey and Gulf of the Farallones. I'm heavily involved in sanctuary issues. I'm speaking today in support of the conditional consistency determination by staff. First, I'd like to speak to process very briefly. The sanctuary program went through extensive public process, both to develop the management plan and to vet the EIR. There were literally scores of well-attended meetings and over 14,000 comments. It was a well-done public process. Tons of individual, heartfelt comments by a variety of people. It was good. Support for marine protected areas and strict limits on aquaculture were dominant topics. In addition, there was considerable debate about motorized personal watercraft. We support the new regulations on ocean dumping and discharge, the addition of Davidson Seamount, the protections against seabed disturbances, and the more restrictive definition of personal watercraft, and the process for establishing MPAs and no-take reserves. We can live with, even though we were heavily involved with, the new personal watercraft zone at Mavericks. We can live with that. We are very supportive of the staff recommendation to prohibit release of non-native species. This last point is critical to the future of the health of our sanctuaries. And again, I kind of agree with the last speaker. This is a no-brainer. Non-native species should not be released or introduced into sanctuary waters. We were shocked by Fish and Game's recommendation. Fish and Game's argument is that this is about state versus federal rights instead of about doing the right thing. I mean, let's just stand back and think about this for a second. You know, we could argue forever about state versus federal rights. I've been to lots of those arguments. Let's just talk about doing the right thing, rising above it, and not allowing the introduction of species. Staff's proposal fills a gap, and it does it with simple, concise language. Instead of committing us to more meetings where we all have to get around and talk about this, let's do this simply. So we strongly support the staff recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Sarah Corbin. And then Mike Osmond. Ms. Corbin, how much time, ma'am?
I'm going to need the full 3 minutes. I apologize.
No problem. Go ahead.
My name is Sarah Corbin. I'm the Central Coast Regional Manager for Surfrider. Good morning, Commissioners, and thank you for the opportunity to comment. Today I'm here on to comment on behalf of the San Mateo County Chapter of Surfrider regarding MPWC use within the sanctuary, specifically the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. Firstly, we do agree with the proposed definition change supported by the staff that will act to close the existing regulatory loophole. We think it's consistent with the intent of the original plan and also consistent with the protection of water-oriented activities. The chapter also agrees that the addition of a seasonal fifth zone and special use permit program for the Mavericks contest would, in concept, be consistent with the Coastal Act. The chapter feels that the recommendations made by NMSP and supported by staff generally represent a measured approach to balancing the provisions of recreational access and opportunity and marine resource protection, but believe additional conditions are necessary in order for the proposal to properly balance these two provisions and adequately protect ecological resources of the sanctuary. Regarding the special use permit allowance for the annual Mavericks contest, the NMSP implies that this allowance is for the existing paddling contest only, which happens once a year. We find this allowance to fall within the balance of recreational access and marine resource protection, but urge that only one contest be permitted annually and that the allowance for the contest also fall within the same time window as the seasonal fifth zone, periods when NOAA declares a high surf warning between December 1st and February 28th of each year. Applying the same time window would act to both minimize the potential for jet ski use to adversely affect marine resources of this area in the same way as it would for the seasonal fifth zone and create consistency between the two allowances. As to the creation of a seasonal fifth zone for jet ski use, the chapter has concerns about overcrowding, reckless operation and enforcement, and recommend additional regulation of jet ski use within this zone to be consistent with Section 3007.5, Resolution of Policy Conflicts. Without fully addressing each of these issues, we do not feel that an allowance for a seasonal fifth zone would be consistent with the Coastal Act, and without added conditions, this zone should not be approved. The closure of this regulatory loophole will actually limit jet ski use in areas where they're currently operated, including use for tow and surfing. So elimination of jet ski use in these other areas will actually leave this seasonal fifth zone as the sole zone within the sanctuary that tow and surfers can engage in their sport. Without additional regulations controlling the number of individual jet skis, it's very likely that the proposed Zone 5 will become overcrowded with jet ski users, leading to adverse impact to marine resources. Similarly, reckless operation in the sensitive zone would have adverse impacts. It should be noted that this fifth zone is different than the other four near harbor zones and is more ecologically sensitive than those four zones. We do have additional recommendations as to how to do this. I don't believe I have time. If you're interested, I can submit additional comment.
Thank you, Ms. Corbin. Okay. Mike Osmond and Jim Curlard, or Curlard. Mr. Osmond, how much time, sir?
30 seconds.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah. My name's Mike Osmond. I'm with World Wildlife Fund. And for the sake of brevity, I would just like to say that we agree with the staff report that proposed policies to protect the sanctuaries from non-native species are inadequate. And we therefore urge the Commission to approve the staff recommendation. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir. How much time do you need?
Probably just a minute.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Jim Curland, and I'm the Marine Program Associate with Defenders of Wildlife based in our Monterey Bay field office, and I'm here representing 200,000 members and supporters in California. And I just want to, you've heard the comments prior to this, but invasive species is a big concern of Defenders of Wildlife. We have Peter Jenkins in our D.C. office, that this is one of his focuses, and we just urge the Commission to approve the staff recommendation on non-native species. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. John Donaldson. How much time, sir, do you need?
3 minutes, if I may.
Yes,
Mr. Chairman.
May. Yes.
Mm-hmm. My name is John Donaldson. I'm here representing the American Watercraft Association, the owners and operators of personal watercraft. We've heard that there's been dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of meetings in Monterey Bay regarding this management plan. I've had the opportunity to participate in several dozen of those meetings myself and have gotten quite familiar with the process. What I'd like to recommend to the Commission is that they find the personal watercraft redefinition not consistent with state access and recreation policies. And my reason for this is that I would characterize these regulations as a solution in search of a problem. Over the course of this process, there have been a number of reasons proposed as to why personal watercraft need additional regulation, including these items don't necessarily appear in your staff report, but they've been offered over the years. The local and state and county jurisdictions have not taken action to adequately restrict or regulate the use of personal watercraft. Well, as you probably know, the county of San Francisco has a personal watercraft regulation. But interestingly enough, the counties in Monterey Bay Marine Sanctuary have not chosen to regulate personal watercraft in any way. Outside of the regulation offered by the city of Santa Cruz, no city in the National Marine Sanctuary has found it necessary to regulate personal watercraft. We've heard here earlier today that the state might like to preserve its regulatory authority on some issues, but on this particular boating issue, the state has chosen to abrogate its any regulatory authority to the NOAA people. And the state has a commission of Boating and Waterways that oversees the Department of Boating and Waterways, and those commissioners have interviewed the NOAA people, and they have found that they have concerns. I can't put words in their mouth, but I attended the meeting, and they had concerns with the overregulation of recreational boating by the NOAA people, particularly relative to personal watercraft. As you note in the staff report, part of the change in the definition is to say any vessel 20 feet or less powered by a jet-powered pump. Now, I'm sure most of you have an idea in your mind what a personal watercraft is, but a 20-foot-long boat would be essentially from the chairman's position to the end of the table. That would be a 20-foot-long boat, and I think that's well outside anyone's concept of currently what a personal watercraft is. So, again, I would certainly request you look at the letter that I've sent and that you not approve the change in the definition of personal watercraft in this portion of the management plan. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Duros, this is your time for rebuttal. How much time do you need? 2-3 minutes?
3 minutes total.
Thank you.
And only 3 points, I think, that I've heard that are worth sharing. And, of course, if you have questions, we'd be happy to answer those. The first one was raised a bit ago by Mr. Ugaretz, and I just want to make sure that the Coastal Commission understands that our regulation on introduced species is a regulation on introduced species. We aren't trying to regulate aquaculture broadly, and that any decision that the state would make on aquaculture are not going to be governed by that or other regulations. It's introduced species. Now, admittedly, if they want to pursue an introduced species aquaculture project, that regulation would prohibit that, and that's the intent. We're not targeting it at aquaculture. We're targeting it at many, many, many different ways that species get introduced into a natural system. The other thing to point out is that about 28% of state waters are in national marine sanctuaries. So that still leaves 72% of the state that's available for non-native aquaculture projects, either for experimentation or whether or not they work, whether or not they're the right approach or project. We believe that that's, you know, a fair balance, that the state can still pursue non-native projects throughout the vast majority of the state. On the point that Kathy Fosmark made, and I certainly appreciate the point that she made, she's been a very effective communicator of the interest of the fishing community. We have been listening very, very closely to what the fishing community has suggested, and I think you'll see, and your staff report, I believe, bears this out, that there are no regulations of fishing in these revised management plans. We had several issues related to fishing, and as was the original commitment, when we have those issues, we bring those to state and federal fisheries managers for their action, and they have taken action on those, both at Cordell Bank and at the Monterey Bay Sanctuary. So we're satisfied in that regard on two or three different fronts, and I think she would be as well, and that we haven't proposed any new regulations. The last point regarding the Surf Rider Foundation comments, I'd like Maria Brown to address those just so you have the full record. She needs about a minute to make those points on that.
Fine, Mr. Duras. Ms. Brown?
Hello, I'm Maria Brown, superintendent of the Gulf of the Farallones National Marine Sanctuary, and have management responsibility over the area referred to as Mavericks. In order to address the Surf Riders' comments, there she had a comment regarding the contest permit, and we concur with her recommendations, and that is reflected within the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary management plan, that there would we're requesting to only do one permit for a contest, that contest happened during the season that we've identified as having minimal impact on wildlife, and that it has to happen during the required wave height. Also, during that time, the Mavericks motorized personal watercraft zone would be closed to the individual personal watercraft surfers. It would be only open for the contest. In terms of her recommendation on the seasonal zone, that we look at doing a limited entry during that time period and training, I think those are very interesting comments, and we are willing to look into those comments as possible ways for implementing that zone. At this moment, I can't give you exact feedback. I need to consider it in more depth. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. With that, I'll close the public hearing, and I'll move back to Dr. Lester.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple comments. One is you've heard a lot today about the tremendous effort and process and coordination and meetings that have gone into these management plans, and I just, from the staff perspective, want to acknowledge that and appreciate that effort that has been made. Your staff also spent countless hours in many working groups from the bottom up, and the fact that we've gotten down to a couple issues is a real testament to that effort and a tremendous effort in coordinating not only stakeholders, but multiple state and federal agencies in these policy questions. One of the things that you'll probably hear more about is just some of the spin-off work that's been occurring because of the management plan effort. And from your standpoint, the commission standpoint, two of those include very strong coordination on shoreline protection device regulation with the sanctuary in Monterey Bay through the permitting process that is ongoing now, which was, as I see it, an outgrowth of some of that working group effort through this management plan process. And in addition, a sub-regional planning effort to deal with shoreline erosion in southern Monterey Bay, which is currently ongoing and is also a direct outgrowth of this process. So we would acknowledge that effort. Just two specific comments on the motorized personal watercraft through the working group process. I don't think it's been mentioned today that there are also exemptions or exceptions, my understanding, for necessary public health and safety measures, so lifeguards and that sort of thing can use these craft when necessary to respond to public emergencies. So the comment that was made concerning potentially conflicting with local interests in regulating this craft, I think is not well placed with respect to their kinds of concerns. I'm not aware of any objections from the local regulators or potential organizations that would be using these crafts with respect to this kind of regulation. So I think that's important to acknowledge. And then finally, with respect to the main issue that you've been hearing about today, invasive species, as staff counsel has already advised, you do have the authority to address that issue, in our view, under the Coastal Act, and it's a policy decision for this commission. The staff is recommending that you that take a strong position on this question of introduced invasive species, and we're available for questions on that matter.
Thank you, Dr. Lester. Did Mr. Delplane want to add anything at all? Okay, fine. Thank you. With that, I'll come back to the commission. Commissioner Wan and Commissioner Baird. Commissioner Blank.
I move that the commission conditionally concur with consistency determination CD-01007 that the project described therein, if modified in accordance with the conditions below, would be fully consistent and thus is consistent to the maximum extent practicable with the enforceable policies of the California Coastal Management Program.
Sir, it's been moved by Commissioner Wan and seconded by Commissioner Schallenberger. They're asking for a yes vote, and which would approve the conditional concurrence with the consistency determination on this first one, CD-010-07. Would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner Wan?
Yes, just very quickly. I think both the sanctuary program and the commission staff have done an excellent job. I know the strengthening of the position by what the commission staff has done is very important, because it's an important statement for this commission to make about the danger of invasive species. And as far as our ability to deal with this, both our legal counsel have told us that we have that ability, and I think Mr. Doris's comments that this is a federal sanctuary in state waters, and that whole program envisions that there isn't a absolute state rights issue here. You have several jurisdictions, you have federal jurisdiction, and you have state agencies, Fish and Game, State Lands, California Coastal Commission, all who have regulatory authority, and all of those regulatory authorities have to be respected.
Commissioner Schallenberger, would you like to speak to your second?
Only to say that I think the record is very strong and clear, particularly with the addition of the condition that staff is recommending. With the exception of the testimony from the Department of Fish and Game, it seems that this is a good, strong proposal, and I would urge the commission to find consistency with the condition added from staff.
Thank you, Commissioner Schallenberg. Commissioner Baird.
I'd just like to reiterate my comments from before, and again, to put them in perspective, 6 years, tremendous process, unbelievable amount. Anybody who's been involved, these folks out here, have been going to workshops for literally years all over the state, and I'm amazed at what a fantastic job has been done. I got to reiterate the position of the Secretary in support of the Department of Fish and Game with these proposed amendments. I think the issue of does the Commission have jurisdiction is absolutely correct. The Commission does have jurisdiction if this language goes into effect to address this issue of non-invasives within state waters. I mean, the Commission has to say yes or no at that time. So I think that's the one jurisdictional issue I see. Obviously, I don't think there's any issue with the commission in this consistency action if they choose however they choose to address this. So just want to reiterate the Secretary's support for the language proposed by the department. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Baird. And then Commissioner Blank.
I just have a question for either staff or sanctuary directors. Either one could answer. Where do inflatables like Zodiacs fall under personal watercraft? Anybody who wants to tell me here?
Please correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that Zodiacs aren't included in the definition of motorized personal watercraft.
Are not. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Do you have a Zodiac?
Actually, I was a little concerned. The rangers on Onondaga State Park use zodiacs on an irregular basis to take out researchers down on Onondaga Island, and I was just concerned because of the requirements for regular permits that would provide an undue burden on the state parks and park system for permits when they actually cannot predict when they might go out for. This is in addition to health and safety. I understand we have health and safety exemptions, but this would be just a burden for them to try to get researchers out when they don't know when they're coming. So my understanding then is they do not need a permit to take a zodiac out from the park to the island. Is that correct? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Blank. Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to offer an amending motion to include the language revisions proposed by the Department of Fish and Game.
Is there a second to that motion? No second. It lacks a second, so it fails. We'll go to the main motion. Would the clerk call the roll again? The maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote, which would approve conditional concurrence with this consistency determination on this first one, CD-010-07. Clerk, call the roll, please.
Commissioner Potter.
Aye.
Commissioner Clark.
Yes.
Commissioner Burke.
Yes.
Commissioner Blank.
Yes.
Commissioner Chajan. Commissioner Wessel?
Yes.
Commissioner Schallenberger?
Yes.
Commissioner Wan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Neely?
Yes.
Chair Kruer?
Yes.
11-0.
Okay, then the...
Yeah, I didn't get the vote that.
Excuse me.
Commissioner Riley didn't get the vote.
Commissioner Riley.
Commissioner Riley, would you vote, please?
Yes. Thank you. I'd like to see the list you're using over there.
Thank you very much. Okay, with that, it's unanimous. The commission hereby conditionally concurs with the consistency determination CD-010-07 by NOAA. Now we're going to go to the second motion for 4C. Commissioner Wan?
I move that the Commission conditionally concur with consistency determination CD-01107 that the project described therein, if modified in accordance with the conditions below, would be fully consistent and thus is consistent to the maximum extent practicable with the enforceable policies of the California Coastal Management Program. And recommend a yes vote.
It's been moved by Commissioner Wan and seconded by Commissioner Schallenberger. Would you like to speak to this motion?
No.
Commissioner Schallenberger? Is there any objection to substituting the last vote for the...
Mr. Chair, if I may ask a question.
Yes, you may, sir. Is that an objection to my question?
No, sir.
You just want to ask a question. Go ahead.
Please. Thank you. Within the San Luis Obispo County, we have the community of Morro Bay, who's pretty much been impacted very heavily with existing regulations, and the harbor has almost become a ghost town because of existing regulations. How much more, with what we have in front of us, going to impact the fishing industry of that community? I understand no new regulations, but as it exists.
Well, in terms of direct regulation, the Monterey Sanctuary comes down to Cambria, so it doesn't actually encompass Morro Bay. But as the regional director said, also there is no direct management of fisheries proposed in these management plans, so I don't believe it would add any additional burden to those communities.
Thank you for the clarification.
Okay. Let me ask it this way then. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote hereby conditionally concurring with the consistency determination? Any objection to that? Hearing none, the commission unanimously concurs with the consistency determination CD-011-07 by NOAA. Okay? Now we're going to, if it's okay with my colleagues, we'll take 4D, which I don't think is going to take long, and then take a bio break. Is that okay? Okay.
Item 4D is a consistency determination submitted by the Corps of Engineers for maintenance dredging of the Federal Navigation Channel in the Los Angeles River Estuary in the city of Long Beach. You should have two letters commenting on the project, one from EPA and one from Gila Bay. In the interest of time, I'm going to severely reduce my comments. The Commission staff recommends that you concur with this consistency determination. There are unsuitable sediments to be dredged as a part of this project. Initially, those sediments were going to be placed in the Port of Long Beach Pier G slip and were going to remain uncovered for a number of months until the Port of Long Beach completes its slip fill project. The LA Contaminated Sediments Task Force Advisory Committee, including your commission staff, met on this project a number of times, and as a result of those meetings, the Corps of Engineers modified their project to cap the unsuitable sediments with clean materials, such that those materials would remain isolated from the marine environment during the period of time after the core project is completed in May until the Port of Long Beach begins their slip fill project later next summer. With that change, the Commission believes that the project is consistent with all the policies of the CCMP. I did make a commitment to Gila Bay to articulate some of the concerns they had because they were not able to come to the meeting today. And you have their letter, and in that letter, Gila Bay remains concerned about the sediment testing procedures, monitoring during dredging, and overall implementation of the long-term management strategy of the task force. Gila Bay also recommended that within the next year, that staff from the commission, the regional board, and EPA meet to assess the effectiveness of the long-term management strategy and to develop recommendations to enhance its implementation. Motion and resolution are found on pages 8 and 9 of the staff report. Representatives from the Corps of Engineers are here to answer questions if you have any. And that concludes the staff presentation.
Thank you very much. Ex parties starting on my left. No ex parties. We have no speaker slips. Commissioner Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the commission concur with consistency determination CD-035-07. That the project described therein is fully consistent and thus is consistent to the maximum extent practicable with the enforceable policies of the California Coastal Management Program. Ask for a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Riley, seconded by Commissioner Wasel. They're asking for a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in the agreement with the determination and the adoption of the resolutions and findings as contained in the staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner Riley? Commissioner Wasel on the second. Okay. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this, thus concurring with the consistency determination? Hearing none, the commission unanimously approves or concurs with the consistency determination by the Corps of Engineers. Thank you very much. We'll take a 10-minute bio. Okay, no problem.
I'm going to speak for about 3 minutes, and then I'm going to turn it over to her for the PowerPoint.
As few as possible. And maybe for... Yeah. You got to hear from them. Is this in order now? Karen Steele. Is she there? She's the one that gave me the next part. She's the turtle. See if you can find her. I don't even know. Yeah, so. No, they are. She told me that she was going to incorporate them all in. I'm just going to ask them.
Hey, Mike, you want to speak on this one?
First? Yeah, you want to speak? We'll put you down. Not put you down. Okay. Who did? Okay, we have a quorum, and before I go to staff, we have a lot of speaker slips, and those people on this item, if you could, the different organizations, I'm going to give one 20-minute to people in opposition. Please be organized to go all within that group, and then other people that need to say something, please limit your time to the best you can. We want to hear from everybody and everyone who's got a speaker slip in, but we're going to start losing the quorum at noon. So, and we don't have a speaker slip from the National Marine Fisheries Services, the applicant here in this case, so if they need to get one in, a speaker slip, because we'll be calling on you first when we come back, when we open the public hearing. And again, if some of you don't need to speak after the opposition or otherwise, you can just raise your hand or stand up or, you know, lot your time if you can, so the commission will have time to deliberate on this. Whatever cooperation you give us, we greatly appreciate it. Thank you. We'll go back, go back to staff now for their presentation.
Thank you. I'm pretty sure the Fisheries Service does intend to testify.
Yes.
Yeah, I need to explain a few procedural items. What's before you is a consistency determination, which is a submittal by a federal agency. Before I go into the procedures, just we pass out a large number of items to you on this, including an addendum, the National Marine Fisheries Service response to the staff recommendation, OCRM correspondence from a lot of people, pro and con. We received about 3,000 emails in the last 3 days in support of the staff recommendation, or I would say opposed to the project, number of phone calls as well. Procedurally, this is a bit of a tricky item. This is supposed to be a federal, what's before you is a federal agency submittal, but when we took a closer look at what we had before us, we felt it was a federal permit. It's an exempted fishing permit that NMFS would be issuing to the applicant for the exempted fishing permit. And so procedurally, we thought that the proper procedure to follow would be the submittal by the applicant for the permit of a consistency certification, which is a different process, has some different ground rules, and hasn't been submitted. So when we saw that and noted that it was an unlisted permit in our coastal management program, we requested permission from OCRM to review the activity, and we received their permission earlier this week. So what that means in practical terms is for this activity to go forward, not only would the commission have to, the commission's action today, it wouldn't be the final decision by the commission on this. The commission would need to also concur with a consistency certification, we'll see as the hearing goes, and after the hearing whether the applicant wants to submit a consistency certification, but as at this point they haven't submitted one. There's another sort of angle about a final commission decision today. As you'll see, the staff is recommending objection based on lack of information. And we believe that NIMS itself hasn't gone through the full analytical process. It hasn't given us the final mitigation measures, its responses to comments. So for a number of reasons, despite their response to our comments, you'll see in your addendum, we're still recommending an objection based on lack of information. We do want to note in their submittal that they did make some changes that are definite improvements. They have moved they have specified what their seabird mitigation measures are. We weren't sure before that. And they've moved the entire area, permitted area, from 30 miles offshore to 40 nautical miles offshore, which has the additional benefit of taking this completely out of any national marine sanctuary. So issues we raised in the staff report on those issues no longer apply. And with that, I'll turn it over to Sarah Townsend for the presentation on the merits.
Thank you, Mr. Delplane. Ms. Townsend?
Good morning, commissioners. The proposed exempted fishing permit before you today would allow one vessel to use shallow-set longline gear off the coast of California to target swordfish. This is a gear type that is currently prohibited. Longline gear may be either shallow-set when targeting swordfish or deep-set when targeting tuna. The shallow-set longline gear proposed would consist of a mainline anywhere from 31 to 62 miles in length that would be deployed behind the vessel. This mainline will hang about 54 feet under the surface of the water, a depth that is shallower compared to that of gear set for tuna. Branch lines hang from the mainline and extend down an additional 72 feet, and each contains a hook at the end. This puts the depth of hooks at about 126 feet. New gear modifications, such as circle hooks and mackerel bait, will be included, and I will discuss these later. The proposed exempted fishing permit would allow one vessel to begin longlining next month in mid-September through mid-December. A total of four trips with 14 sets per trip and a maximum of 1,200 hooks per set would result in the setting of 67,200 hooks over the next 3 months. Now I'd like to provide a bit of perspective regarding California's commercial swordfish fishery. Historically, swordfish were managed by the state of California. The only legal commercial gear types allowed are harpoon and drift gillnet. This gear regulation applies to the entire exclusive economic zone, which is the area from the coastline out to 200 nautical miles. California used to allow fishermen who caught swordfish with longline gear outside of the economic zone to land their catch in California, but California has never allowed longlining for swordfish within its exclusive economic zone. 3 years ago, in 2004, management of swordfish switched from California to the National Marine Fisheries Service, NIMFS. NIMFS issued a new regulation that prohibited shallow-set longlining outside of the exclusive economic zone as well. This regulation was designed to avoid further impacts to loggerhead and leatherback sea turtles, which were getting caught in the longlines. Today, West Coast commercial fishermen may only use harpoons or drift gill nets to catch swordfish. Shallow-set longlining is prohibited both inside and outside of the exclusive economic zone. I mentioned that sea turtles get caught in longlines. The taking of non-target species is also known as bycatch, or the total fishing mortality excluding that of the retained target species. NIMS prepared a draft environmental assessment to account for bycatch from the proposed exempted fishing permit. However, there is no directly applicable data available for this assessment because California has never had a longline fishery. Instead, the draft environmental assessment contains bycatch estimates from other fisheries around the United States. The methodology used has not been made public yet. However, they do anticipate that a variety of finfish, seabirds, sea turtles, and marine mammals will be taken, although no specific numbers have been provided. Unlike harpoons, which have basically zero bycatch, longlines actually generate more bycatch than they do swordfish. The draft environmental assessment cites data from the shallow set longline fishery in Hawaii, which yields 60% bycatch and 40% swordfish. Blue sharks, pictured here in the left, account for most of the bycatch and are landed at nearly the same rate as swordfish, followed by mahi-mahi, escolar, and big-eye tuna. The types of protected species caught as bycatch include seabirds, pictured here in the water targeting the bait, marine mammals, such as this sperm whale here who is also targeting the bait, and sea turtles, such as this leatherback here on the right. The proposed exempted fishing permit will have impacts on a wide range of species. For our presentation today, and in the interest of time, we will focus primarily on impacts to leatherback sea turtles because NIMS anticipates they will be taken. Section 30230 focuses on special protection for areas and species of special biological significance, and we believe leatherback sea turtles qualify for this special protection. Leatherbacks are a federally endangered species in danger of extinction throughout all of their range. The World Conservation Union, of which the United States is a member state, has designated leatherbacks as critically endangered, a designation given only when a species is facing an extremely high risk of extinction in the wild in the immediate future. Researchers from NIMS Southwest Fisheries Science Center in San Diego, one of whom is pictured here, maintain Pacific leatherbacks have suffered a population reduction of 95% over the last 20 years. And we remind you that in 2002, this commission adopted a resolution expressing strong concerns about the need to protect sea turtles. Now, taking a look at this map, you can see in green an area called the Pacific Leatherback Conservation Area. We believe this area qualifies as an area of special biological significance for a number of reasons. First, in 2001, NIMS created the Pacific Leatherback Conservation Area to prevent further leatherback takes by the drift gillnet fishery. It requires this geographic area occurring from about Point Conception north to Lincoln City, Oregon, to be closed each year from August 15th to November 15th. This has been a highly successful time and area closure because no leatherbacks have been taken by the drift gillnet fishery since its inception in 2001. Second, the 1998 Pacific Leatherback Recovery Plan cited incidental catch from fisheries as a very great threat to leatherbacks and hypothesized that the west coast of the United States contained important feeding grounds, transit areas, and migratory corridors. Third, this has been confirmed more recently by a series of studies published this year. These studies demonstrate the leatherbacks observed off the Central California coast are foraging for food, primarily jellyfish, and that they come from Western Pacific nesting beaches in Jemerspa Meti, Indonesia. Both genetic analyses and tracking studies confirm this. We now understand that the waters off of Central California, the same waters included in the Pacific Leatherback Conservation Area, are a critical foraging area for the largest last remaining Western Pacific nesting population, and that an active migratory route exists between here and Indonesia. Taking a look at the map again, you can see that the proposed exempted fishing permit will allow fishing anywhere within this red hatched area. This is directly adjacent to three national marine sanctuaries and overlaps with nearly 100% of the Pacific Leatherback Conservation Area. I would like to briefly touch on how and why sea turtles are hooked by longline gear. Leatherbacks and loggerheads are the primary species of sea turtles incidentally captured by longlines. Loggerheads target the bait and are usually hooked internally in the mouth or throat, shown down here in the left-hand corner. Leatherbacks, by contrast, are usually externally hooked in their flippers, this turtle above. Traditional longline gear includes Japan hooks, or J hooks, and squid bait. New gear types designed to reduce the incidental take of sea turtles were devised and tested in the western North Atlantic from 2001 to 2003. Results indicated that using larger circle hooks, here on the right, and mackerel bait, shown here, greatly reduced the capture rate of both species. In 2004, these new gear modifications were made mandatory in the Atlantic and Hawaii with somewhat mixed results. While both fisheries have decreased the amount of sea turtles captured, there have also been some unintended takes of other protected species. These results imply that it's very difficult to accurately predict which species will be affected by longlines and at what rate. NIMS has not provided us with any hard numbers for any species, thus making an impacts analysis difficult. In lieu of that, we can examine what is known. Firstly, while the study in the Western Atlantic reduced the leatherback capture rate by 63%, it reduced the estimated mortality rate by only 1%, dropping it from 14% to 13%. This is a very important distinction to make because it means that the same amount of leatherbacks are estimated to die from hooking, regardless of whether the old gear or the new gear is used. This is because leatherbacks were already getting hooked externally more often than internally, so the effect of the new gear was less pronounced. The proposed exempted fishing permit will use the new gear. Secondly, let's examine our baseline. Our baseline here in California for leatherback turtles is currently zero. The proposed exempted fishing permit, while purporting to decrease bycatch and mortality for sea turtles, will actually increase it. How much will it increase? That is unclear because NIMS has not completed its analysis. In addition to concerns about leatherbacks, there are a number of other species that we believe qualify for special protection, including the 9 listed species of threatened and endangered marine mammals that live off the coast of California. NIMS believes the exempted fishing permit will impact zero of these animals, but the methodology behind this estimation has not been provided to us. We also have informational concerns about the 6 species that NIMS does state will be taken, these 6 here. Again, the methodology used is not provided, nor are any hard numbers. They simply use the term small numbers. These same concerns apply to seabirds. NIMS states there will be no impacts to the federally endangered short-tailed albatross and takes of 1 black-footed albatross and 2 laysan albatrosses. Again, the methodology behind this estimation has not been provided to us, and a review of other species was not included. We also have particular concerns about short-fin pilot whales. The population of these particular marine mammals can sustain only a very small level of incidental take in commercial fisheries, and we therefore believe they also qualify for special protection. Results from the longline fishery in the Atlantic indicate a major increase in the number of pilot whale interactions since the new gear modifications were implemented in 2004. We are concerned there could be a similar outcome in California. This completes my presentation.
Commissioner, just to sum up the staff recommendation, we want to make it abundantly clear that we absolutely support NIMS's efforts to reduce bycatch in fisheries, and they are working hard on that and accomplishing a lot. Our big concern is opening up a new area that's not fished to a fishery that does still have large quantities of bycatch. We're generally reluctant to get into fisheries management issues. We monitor a lot of activities that go on. There's a process in place. The state has a role on the management council through the Department of Fish and Game. I think it's worth noting that the Department of Fish and Game did vote no when this came up before the management council. But due to our staff time and the department's role in the council, we don't really intend to get into these issues very often. On the other hand, if we see one in through our monitoring that we feel it does need to be brought to the commission's attention, we will do that, entertain that thought, go through that process, and that's why this one is before you today. And then I will just end with a note that there was a notice in the Federal Register yesterday by the National Marine Fisheries Service denying an exempted fishing permit on the East Coast, and indicating one of their concerns was that it wasn't a well-designed scientific study, among other concerns that they expressed. And that completes the staff presentation.
Thank you very much. I'll come back to the commission for ex parties, starting on my left.
Mr. Chair, I had a brief conversation Monday with Kathy Fosmark, in which she expressed her concerns to the fishing industry with the proposed regulations.
Thank you, Commissioner Potter. Commissioner Schellenberger?
Wednesday, this past 2 days ago, I had a meeting with Brendan Cummings, attorney for the Oceans Program Director for the Center for Biological Diversity. He briefed me on the background of the leatherback sea turtle in particular, beginning in 1990. The population went on steep decline, about a closure in Hawaii in 1999. When the closure occurred in Hawaii, the entire fleet continued to fish the same general areas, but just landed their fish in California. We talked about in 2001 there was a closure off the California coast, and it was 100% successful for the leatherbacks. That NIMS is trying to switch from gillnet fishing to longline fishing. And then we had a some kind of grueling discussion about all the things that longline fishing kills, including albatross. That what's before us is just a permit for one boat, and that actually one boat may be the impact is probably very, very low. It's estimated that five leatherbacks are taken and only one is killed. But given the condition of the leatherbacks, this is one too many, and that's that same problem of only if we permit one boat, it's only the beginning until where do you argue that it shouldn't be a fleet. That the turtles are probably attracted to the light switches that are used to attract the swordfish. They get completely tangled up in the gear. I didn't know leatherbacks are very heavy. They can be up to 2,000 pounds, which makes them difficult for the fishermen to pull into the boat and therefore release them. And so it's not uncommon for them just cut the monofilament and let the leatherback go with the gear. And then we talked about just the various different populations, where they are, and where they are no longer, unfortunately, and they all seem to be in very significant decline. All of California tags, all of the leatherbacks that come to California seem to be coming from New Guinea. So it was a very interesting discussion.
Thank you, Ms. Schellenberg. I had a phone call on Monday, the 6th of August, from Karen Steele, First Talk, asking about procedure for this hearing today and on time elements, et cetera. I discussed that, and then she told me of her great problem and great concern with longline fishing, and especially in one of the most important areas of the California coast, and the effects on turtles and all other coastal resources. And she explained that this has not been allowed off of California and that this exemption for the scientific or pilot project would be a terrible precedence and a terrible policy for us to adopt. So that was the extent of my ex parte with Ms. Steele.
My ex parties are on file. I sent them in. They were with Brandon Cummings from the Center for Biological Diversity, and then I received this Monday an email from a Rich McLellan, who just had a single line saying that he was opposed to allowing longline fishermen to use protected sea turtle sanctuaries.
Mr. Blank?
I had a phone call from Brandon Cummings on Tuesday, August 7th, about 10 o'clock. He repeated most of the comments other commissioners mentioned about sea turtles and bycatch in general. He specifically said with regards to the Coastal Act that this request for a permit is inconsistent with sections 302.30 and 302.40, which protect sensitive species in ESHA. On August 1st, I had the first conversation with Graham Chisholm, Director of Conservation of Audubon, California, about longline fishing and its impact on seabirds, and he educated me a bit about longline bycatch of albatross and other seabirds. And at this time, he said there's no overall policy that's been adopted to ensure seabirds and other species, including turtles, are adequately protected. And he pointed me to some pretty good documents, the American Bird Conservancy policy on seabirds and the Humane Society document on longline fishing threatened seabirds. And that's my ex parte.
Thank you, Commissioner Blank. Commissioner Baird, did you have any? Oh, thank you, sir. With that, that's the extent of the we'll go open up the public hearing, and first we'll call on the applicant, Mark Halvey from NIMS. How much time, sir, are you requesting for your presentation today?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to present a PowerPoint presentation of 8 slides. I think I can do it in 10 minutes.
Sure. Yes, sir.
And I believe the...
And how much time for rebuttal, 2 or 3 minutes? 3 minutes?
That would be fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Mark Hilvey. I'm the Assistant Regional Administrator for Sustainable Fisheries, NOAA's National Marine Fisheries Service. We're here this morning to speak on behalf of the applicant for this trial fishery. We think this fishery is a more conservative way to fish swordfish. What's driving the interest in this action is I think quite a bit of misunderstanding and misinformation that is being propagated. We find that the staff's report had considerable number of factual errors. Some of those were repeated earlier. And what I'd like to do this morning is just go through real quickly some of the key issues that I think are some of the things that you've heard from your constituents. If I could go to the first slide, please.
Sir, let me ask you while you're pausing. Does Mr. Dupay, Pete Dupay, is he part of your organized presentation, or is he coming separately? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, it was my understanding that there was 20 minutes for arts as well as Mr. Dupuy.
That's fine. We'll allot you 20 minutes, and of that, 3 minutes rebuttal time, so you'll have like 17 minutes. So if you want to use 10, then Mr. Dupuy can use the other 7. Okay?
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Go ahead. Thank you.
This has already been shown, so I won't belabor the point, although I would make the comment that the one advantage of shallow set long line for swordfish, which does occur at night, is that the leader lines, the lines that the hook is attached to, are long enough for the animal to get air-breathing animals to get back to the surface. So there's very little drowning that occurs. That's the difference from deep set, which is focusing on tunas and set much deeper, where you do have the drownings. I'm going back because I missed a slide here. I wanted to talk very briefly about some fishing concepts. We keep hearing the word bycatch. Let me just put things in perspective. When a fisherman goes out, he's targeting a particular species. In this particular case, the applicant is gearing for swordfish. Swordfish rises to the surface at night to feed, and the baited gear is intended to attract the animal to the hook. With that, with a baited hook, you are also going to catch other fish. We call that secondary catch. And that also constitutes an important part of the fisherman's catch. It's marketable catch, such as sharks. Bycatch is the amount, the biomass that is discarded. These are the items that either through economic or regulatory controls are not kept by the fishermen. That would include marine mammals, of course, and turtles. So I think when we see numbers of bycatch, the question we need to ask, is that all catch or is it just what has been discarded? And NIMS treats bycatch as the discarded catch. Shallow set long line exempted fishing permit facts. I want to go through 5 comments that seem to be fairly regular in the statements made by constituents concerned about this gear type, and also that were in the staff report. I would point out that this is called an exempted fishing permit, not an experimental fishing permit. There is a difference. This is designed to be a trial, a preliminary evaluation. Comment 1, longline fishing gear is non-selective / destructive. In fact, destructive was the term used in the staff report. The Fishery Service counters that longline studies demonstrate that selective fishing techniques can be developed for targeting and capturing organisms by size and species during the fishing operation, allowing non-targets to be released alive, the bycatch. There are 3 ways that fishery managers address bycatch, three strategies. One is using selective gear. The agency is still conducting studies to improve that. There's also deterrence mechanisms such as acoustical pingers that deter marine mammals, and then there's avoidance strategies such as time area closures. In this particular case, we're focusing on circle hooks, mackerel bait, line cutters, dehookers, devices that have been proven to show increased survivorship with turtles and other species. And this is something that is ongoing. The fishing continues, selective fishing continues to be a big part of NIMS bycatch reduction programs. Comment two, the exempted fishing permit, not a valid experiment. We're looking at this as a very preliminary first step in constructing future management decisions. The agency's goal is to find the most conservative way to fish for swordfish. Currently, the two methods that are used are drift gill net and harpoon. We feel that if given a chance, long line may be a more selective way, a more conservative way to catch swordfish. The whole purpose of this EFP, exempted fishing permit, evaluate the cost effectiveness. Can the fisherman make a living at using this? He's now sinking money to buy bait, to go out with fuel. Is this going to be worth his while? Also, we will be able to get information on examining ratios of discards to the unit weight of swordfish landing, and we can start making preliminary comparisons with the drift gillnet fishery. Comment three, apply leatherback conservation area to the EFP. We saw earlier slide on that from Ms. Thompson. Fact, NIMS identify the time area closure as the most appropriate bycatch reduction strategy for drift gill nets. This was a time area closure based on several years of information in the drift gill net fishery where leatherbacks were taken. A box was drawn around those interactions, and that became this area. It was only meant to deal with drift gill nets. We felt that the time area closure was the only solution. The agency does not feel that this closure has any application to a gear that has not been tested. And lastly, we talk about this being an area of special biological significance. We disagree with all of the area is important. Is it special? We don't think the leatherback conservation area constitutes what is special. We just know that they're there. And a point to elaborate on that is that critical habitat has not been designated for leatherback turtles off California under the Endangered Species Act. Comment four, the EFP would greatly impact seabirds. This EFP is going to be done at night, as I mentioned. That's when the swordfish come up to feed. This is a strategy to avoid all seabird species. The agency does not believe that any short-tailed albatross will be taken, and we have noticed that zero takes have occurred in the Hawaii fishery and the California longline fishery, which took place for several years outside of 200 miles, and it was a daytime fishery. We estimate that one or two black-footed or laysan albatross may be taken, and we know that from the California longline fishery they were taken, but that was during the daytime. And last comment, the EFP places several ESA-listed marine mammals at risk. NIMS says the takes of ESA-listed marine mammals is extremely uncommon in this fishery, and non-listed marine mammal interactions very rare in shallow set longline gear. Our position, and it was stated that all the information is still not available, our environmental assessment is rapidly coming to closure. We should have that finished in a couple of weeks. There's a biological opinion that accompanies that. That will state or establish our record for why we think the impacts to this gear type will be minimal. Another issue is that short fin pilot whales will be a concern in this fishery. The agency would like to make clear that this is a tropical species, normally found in water 70 to 80 degrees, and only seen during warm water years off California, such as El Nino and in the Southern California Bight, where the fishermen will not be fishing. We really don't think that short fin pilot whales will occur in this fishery. The environmental safeguards to be implemented in this trial, the fishermen would use the selective fishing techniques, as I have mentioned, of the circle hooks, the offset shank to the hook, and use the use of mackerel bait instead of the squid bait.
They will be required to have de-hookers and line cutters. There was a comment made about how easy it is to cut the line and let the animal go. This will be a 100% observer trial. Currently, the Hawaii fishery is 100%, and if this fishery proceeded, we expect this also to be 100% observer. So there are people on board to make sure that these terms and conditions that would be in the permit, such as using de-hooking equipment, would be used. The vessel operator will be required to undergo training for safe handling and release of sea turtles, the use of this required release gear, and how to apply sea turtle restoration coverage or requirements. And then lastly, 100% observer coverage. My last slide, we think this is consistent with the this portion of the California Coastal Act. We're using the modified gear, the selective gear shown to reduce bycatch. The modified gear also reduces mortality.
Mr. Helvey, your time is up if you wanted to be for your 10 minutes. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Let me just get to the very the bottom, that we are undergoing a process using the Marine Mammal Protection Act, the Endangered Species Act, and the Magnuson-Stevens Act, all within NEPA. We believe that those safeguards that are standards that the agency is required to adhere to are consistent with the same requirements of the Coastal Act. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, and we'll call you back up for a rebuttal. Mr. Pete Dupuy, for your... For your 7 minutes? Okay. Sir, we won't start the clock till they're ready, but you have actually 6 minutes left. So.
Where's the saddle?
If we can't get the sound going, I can pass on you for a minute and go to somebody else and see if they can get it going. But we're going to run out of time here. No sound yet? Okay. Mr. Tupe, you could come back. We'll continue to see if they can get the sound going, and we'll just hold you in abeyance here for him. Okay? I'm going to go to the next speaker because if you need that sound, I need to move. Okay, we will. So, but we'll come back to you. We're going to move to someone else, and we'll come back to you for your 6 minutes. Is that okay with you? Okay. Ms. Karen Steele? I don't see anybody for it. Oh, wait a minute. Ms. Steele, I'm sorry. Let me, in interest of the people that are in favor of the staff recommendation, let me just take someone else here that's out of order, and then maybe he can come back before you do your organized presentation. Thank you. Brenda Cummings? No. Oh, no. I'm looking for somebody. Okay, we have a few here. Bob Strickland, then. Mr. Strickland, you can come up, sir. 3 minutes.
Yes, excuse me, good afternoon. My name is Bob Strickland. I'm the president of United Anglers of California. And I'm having a little trouble with my voice. As far as this long line goes, I'm a recreational fisherman. I represent recreational fishermen. We feel that it's an indiscriminate fishery, that they can't go out and tell us they're going to catch the fish they're going to catch. They're going to catch what we call bycatch. How much, we don't know. They say there's some numbers. Are they true? We don't know. But there's other fish that are being caught in this thing besides the turtles and the birds. There's also golden eye and canary rockfish, which are fish that we cannot take, that are non-takeable fish for the recreational fishermen. And I'm sure they picked some of those up too, and they're not even mentioned. But that's a throwaway fish. And it's a shame to see any of these fish thrown away. Any of these fisheries, the long line, the nets, these are what I call indiscriminate fisheries. In other words, they cannot target and say they're going to catch X because they're going to wind up catching X, Y, and Z. And X, and Y are going to go back in the water. And we've seen movies of them with shovels shoveling the fish back in the water. And we, you know, I've been with the Marine Fish Pacific Coast Council, and everybody for years, all we hear about is we're going to cut down the bycatch. Well, the only way to cut down the bycatch is to stop the fishing that's causing it. Hook and line fishing is not causing it. Yeah, I know the fishermen have to make a living and they have to catch big quantities of fish. We got to find a way for them to do that in a discriminate way, not a non-discriminate way. That's all I have to say. Thank you. I can't talk anyway. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Strickland. Here. Mr. Osmond. Mike Osmond. How much time, sir?
2 minutes. Maybe?
Yes, sir.
Good morning. Mike Osmond from World Wildlife Fund. I'm here on behalf of World Wildlife Fund to support PDP's application for an exempted fishing permit to conduct a long line fishery off the coast of California. The current ban on long line fishing in California and Pacific Fisheries Management Council waters is similar to the situation that existed in Hawaiian waters just a few years ago. Because of interactions with sea turtles and their declining populations, the swordfish long lining industry was closed in 2001. By working together, the industry, the Western Pacific Fisheries Management Council, and NOAA were able to adopt measures that enabled the long line fisheries to be reopened. These measures included set limits, mandatory observers, a cap on turtle interactions, the use of circle hooks, and selective use of bait species. These measures had previously been trialled in the North Atlantic, with NOAA and fishermen conducting 3 years of research testing these changes in gear and techniques. Turtle bycatch was reduced as much as 90% in some cases, without significantly reducing the catch of target species of the fishery. As outlined in his EFP application, Mr. Dupuy will be required to operate under similar restrictions to those implemented in Hawaii, and has indicated a willingness to undertake trials of gear sets and gear modifications to further reduce possible bycatch of non-target species. Approval of this EFP would provide further means of testing gear improvements, with funding already being appropriated by NOAA Southwest Fisheries Centre to support this EFP. This is a move towards bringing consistency between the Hawaiian and West Coast fleets in this fishery. The Hawaiian example has shown that a longline fishery can be substantially improved with gear and management modifications rather than being simply shut down. The initiative in Hawaii is an important component of a larger international effort to eliminate the threat of longline fishing to sea turtles. World Wildlife Fund believes that the US needs to lead by example. Improvements adopted and refined in the Hawaiian fishery will be instrumental in transforming other fleets. I have a meeting next month in Taiwan with representatives of the Taiwanese longline fleet to introduce them to improvements in the US fishing fleets. Given the trajectory of Pacific leatherbacks and loggerheads, it is essential that we reduce bycatch not only in the US fleet, but in all fishing fleets in the Pacific. International fisheries management bodies have recognized this need and called on all fleets to improve fishing gear and techniques to reduce turtle bycatch. The problem is one of international dimension.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Zeke Grader. And then John LaGrange. How much time, sir?
3 minutes would be fine.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. My name is Zeke Grader. I'm with the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations. At the outset, let me say that none of my members of my or any of the organizations we represent have any interest in this fishery, nor were we involved in any way in shaping this experimental program or this evaluation program. That said, however, I would like to speak in favor of what the U.S. National Marine Fisheries Service has proposed and against your staff recommendation. I think there are two issues here that are vital concern to us in whatever fishery we're involved with. One is to be able to proceed with experimenting with fishing gear. This is absolutely critical because we recognize the need that with certain types of fishing gear, we need to make them much more selective. We've heard about bycatch. We need to make them much more environmentally friendly. We had that instance particularly with some trawl gear and trying to get it up off the ocean floor or using it lighter so it doesn't destroy bottom habitat. To be able to do this, we need to be able to experiment. These things don't happen overnight. We've got to be able to go out and try gear, try different things, try areas, and find what can be more selective. I think most of our fishing industry is committed to doing that. We've made great progress, in fact, here off of the California over the years with the drift nets, which is almost sounds counterintuitive because everybody assumes that these are the walls, curtains of death in the mid-Pacific that are taking and killing everything. In fact, we've made this gear pretty selective, and in some areas, such as San Francisco Bay and Bristol Bay for salmon, that is the most selective and cleanest way of taking gear. Likewise, we've made big strides with long lines, particularly in the North Pacific and the halibut and black cod fishery, in completely avoiding now albatross with the way the gear is deployed. All this takes experimentation, and that's what I think is important here, is that we allow people to at least experiment and see if we can, within parameters to protect turtles and other types of animals, but we've got to be able to experiment if we're ever going to develop selective fishing gear. That's the fact of the matter. And we've provided for that, trying to get federal funding to try and help with that, but we've got to be able to experiment. Just giving it lip service or writing it in law doesn't do any good unless we can do it. The last issue here is I think it's absolutely important that the U.S. stay at the table on the issue of the conservation and management of swordfish and billfish worldwide. And if we completely eliminate our catches here, it's going to make it very hard in international forums to make the case for protecting seabirds, for protecting turtles and us, if we're not at the table. And it's really important that for that reason that we stay at the table and have a swordfish fishery. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. LaGrange. And do we have the video fixed yet for Mr. DuBois? It is? Okay, Mr. LaGrange, you can... No, sir, you... No, you can come up. Thank you. And how much time, sir, are you requesting again, Mark?
Oh, I'd like 3 minutes at least, I guess.
3 minutes? Yes.
My name's John LaGrange. I'm a commercial longline fisherman. native Californian, fished out of San Diego as my home port for 25 years. 5 years ago, I moved my fishing operation to the state of Hawaii. After watching this kind of process go on in the state of California for hundreds of meetings that I've sat in, I'm more and more glad that I've moved my operation out of the state. I don't ever intend to bring it back. I got a copy of a letter written by the staff of the Coast Commission over the executive director's name that was sent to the federal officials requesting this hearing. I read over the letter and was amazed at the number of factual errors and misrepresentations in the letter. I tried to contact the Coast Commissioner closest to my home, Mr. Pete Kruger, who is in La Jolla. I called him, left a voicemail that I had these concerns. I never got a call back, so I was interested to hear that the commissioners had had all these other conversations with members of the groups that are opposing this measure when I was unable to have one. I did write a letter and sent it to the Coast Commission enumerating some of the misstatements and errors in the staff letter. And I talked to Mark Delaplane about it. He was very interested. But 2 days later, the staff recommendation came out. So clearly, they had made the recommendation based on the information they had before I sent in my objections to it. I'd like to go over just a few of the misstatements that were in that 8-page letter. I picked out 14. The very first, almost the first line of the thing was that, and this was restated by staff today, that California has never allowed swordfish longlining inside the EEZ. That's not true. California has issued several experimental swordfish longline permits over the years. The second was that it was a small number of boats based out of California were fishing swordfish outside the 200-mile limit before it was closed. At the time it was closed in 2004, this longline swordfish longline fishery fishing out of California was the largest highly migratory species fishery in California. Another statement, today fishermen are prohibited from targeting swordfish using shallow set gear both inside and outside of the West Coast EEZ. That's only true of West Coast fishermen. Hawaii permitted fishermen are allowed to fish right up to the EEZ line and land the fish on the West Coast.
Mr. LaGrange, your time is up. Thank you, sir.
Figures. I just want to mention that the seafood card out here was really good because it says that domestic longline swordfish is a good choice. Imported swordfish, avoid.
Thank you, Mr. LaGrange. Okay. Are we ready then, Mr. So you have 6 minutes, sir.
My whole day's been going like this. The airplane sat an hour on the tarmac in L.A. I thought I was going to miss this thing.
Cost me to buy it right off the boat.
No amount of driving seemed too far, as long as people got to buy fresh fish right off the deck of the Ventura. Regulars and first-timers from all over came to buy Big Eye, Albacore, and Yellowfin Tuna at the Ventura Harbor.
Been out here, families and so forth, purchasing this fish.
And it's just fun to be able to buy it.
No amount of driving seemed too far, as long as people got to buy fresh fish right off the deck of the Ventura 2.
Please.
took us an hour, but still worth to come and buy.
Commercial fisherman and captain of the Ventura 2, Pete Dupuy, has noticed an increase in the amount of people buying fish at the harbor.
They get us excited, and it kind of goes from us to them and back and forth. And this because
I don't know what's wrong with
the people here. Want this, and we want it to happen. I mean, we get from low-end people to high-end people. But they all want the same thing. They want a good quality product. That's all they're looking for. And they want a fair deal. And that's what we're trying to do is give them a fair deal and a good quality product.
And for the people who buy fish, that good quality product starts with what the people love and want, fresh fish.
To find a fresh, real fresh fish, you know, so they will be tastier and better for our health, you know.
It's healthy.
Healthy.
Well, fish has to the key issue, and this is one of the few places that I can find really fresh.
Well, the freshness is one of the things that we really like. It's yeah. You know, top quality, no middleman. There couldn't be, you know, as far as we're concerned, we're getting it ocean fresh. So
without having the inconvenience of going out and getting seasick.
People demand this fish because of the good prices.
More affordable to everybody. Mm-hmm. And so, an opportunity to get a great deal.
People.
Go ahead and turn it off. You got it all.
Source for their local economic needs.
I think it's really important to keep the economy going, and it's great to. To just have the experience.
Mm-hmm. Local communities have a greater.
I'm sorry it didn't work. That.
You have a few minutes left. Why don't you tell us?
Well, anyway, I wanted you to hear these people. I wanted you to see these people. These people. They're people from California that want a California product. You're responsible for me right here today. That pier that I was standing on was put there because of you people. We have to use that pier, and we have to use it right. These people want it. I'm sorry you didn't get to hear them. I know my CD was in good shape. You got a problem with your sound equipment there and everything. I don't know what it is. And it's kind of screwing my whole thing up here. But anyway, I'll keep going the best I can.
You have the time to talk.
Okay. The man behind the camera in that film, it's my son. The girl who narrated, which she did a beautiful job, but it's not coming across. It's my granddaughter. The woman selling the fish, the blondes, my wife. The redheads, my daughter. This is a mom and pop deal. I don't have lawyers working for me. I don't have a staff of office workers. My wife runs the office. When she asks for a raise, instead of raise, I give her a promotion. A bigger title, but no more money. It's hard nowadays. We got a problem. We have a real problem. We have a problem with these turtles, and I know about turtles. For the last 4 years, I've been working with leatherback turtles. I raised, in the last 3 years, over $100,000 and been on the beaches working with other environmentalists on the problem. One of the problems is there's a certain group of people that focus on suing and legislating and laws and regulations and this and that, but they lost focus of what the real problem is. We got to pull together and fix that. Fix that problem. I don't know how you people got involved in this. For 8 years, I've been working on this particular problem with the longlining. Last 5 years, National Marine Fisheries Service. It took me a long time to convince people that we can approach this in a different direction. People are starting to get convinced in a lot of different avenues. There's people here today that spoke and didn't speak for me before. But they're starting to see something different. They're seeing the turtles aren't getting fixed this way or that way, but there is ways that can be done. And it's being proved in other parts of this world. Bureaucracy is a terrible thing to me. It's killed me. Now I'm tied up in it again. I had not a clue that I was going to get involved with the Coastal Commission. I don't know what happened or how or whatever. And I've spent a lot of money, a lot of time, thought I was going through the proper channels, doing something through the proper hoops, doing everything proper to try to sell my idea. And I thought it was finally done. But all of a sudden, I'm starting over again. And I already failed with my tape that I wanted to show you. But
sir, your time is up. But
okay.
But we do get what we are listening.
So. Well, there's something else. The information that you get, and there's a lot of good people here, really meet a lot. They do believe what they're saying. But you're getting a lot of missed information, old information.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your testimony today, and thank you for coming here. Sorry about the tape, the technical difficulty. With that, Ms. Karen Steele, and you have an organized presentation of, I see at least 5 speaker slips here, and you're going to tell me how much time of the 20 minutes, and I really need other people, these other speaker slips, because, you know, to either, when they do come up, take less than 3 minutes or do something, or we're going to run out of time on this. And so, Ms. Steele?
Yeah, we can ask for 15 minutes because some of the stuff we wanted to cover has already been covered. So
That's good. That's okay.
And hopefully we may be
shorter. And how much time, Ms. Steele, do you want of the 15 minutes? Because you have
3 minutes.
3 minutes, okay. Thank you. Thank you.
So my name is Karen Steele from the Sea Turtle Restoration Project, and I'm leading off a presentation on behalf of a coalition of organizations, including the Sea Turtle Restoration Project, Center for Biological Diversity, the Ocean Conservancy, Oceana, Defenders of Wildlife, and the Humane Society of the United States. And we just want to clarify that we support the staff recommendation that the Commission does not concur with the consistency determination CD04107. We believe the longline permit is inconsistent with the California Coastal Act, which is the decision that is being made today. The staff presentation from the California Coastal Commission covered many of the points on my initial presentation, so I will not double up on that. So just to clarify, longline fishing is a very non-selective fishing gear. It was highlighted that the level of bycatch by the commission staff. So in essence, just to highlight that, for every 10 longline hooks, there can be 5 to 7 hooks that are catching non-targeted fish and other marine species. Just to reiterate, our concerns are with endangered sea turtles, protected and endangered marine mammals, seabirds, sharks, other fish species, with the Pacific leatherback being of the main concern. And just to reiterate, this is being proposed in an area that has been identified as important habitat for the Pacific leatherback, which will be clarified further in the presentation. And longline fishing has been identified internationally as a significant contributor to the decline of this species. One thing I would like to mention is comments on the short fin pilot whale. And just to clarify that in the area where this fishery will be occurring, the potential biological removal is currently 1.2. And it is currently under review at this point, and it's being recommended to be decreased to below 1. So what that means is that capturing just one of these species could be have a significant impact for this species. Now, there was a comment regarding that this area, because of the water temperature, is so the short fin pilot whale is not a concern. And I would just like to read specific comments from Sharon Young, who is the Marine Issues Field Director for the Humane Society of the United States and was recently on a take reduction team for the Atlantic longline fishery. And this is just directly reading her comment in regards to this. Just to highlight that the effort for this fishery is planned to be targeted in water temperature between 60 to 65 degrees Fahrenheit, which is stated to be colder than what pilot whales prefer. And Sharon states, in brief, the draft environmental assessment ignored data available from the Southeast Fisheries Science Center of NIMS, which were presented to a take reduction team which I sit. NIMS examined longline bycatch of marine mammals in the Atlantic and found significant rates of serious injury. Although most interactions did occur over 70 degrees, interactions did begin to increase in temperatures of 60 to 66 degrees Fahrenheit. Although the EA for this...
Ms. Steele, you've gone over your 3 minutes. You can keep going, but you're taking from your
other... I'll just finish this one sentence. So just to reiterate is that this is the water temperature that they will be fishing in, and so short fin pilot whale are known to have been caught in this water temperature, so they should be a concern, particularly as just one of these pilot whales could be a significant impact. So I will let my next person. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Steele. And you're Jim Curlin?
My name is Jeff Chester. I'm a... PhD candidate at Stanford University at Hopkins Marine Station, and talking on behalf of Oceana. I'm going to talk a little bit, just briefly, about the status.
How much time, sir?
3 minutes is fine.
Okay.
Thank you. I just want to begin by just mentioning that the Pacific leatherback sea turtle is the only species left in its family, in taxonomic family Dermochelidae, which means actually that it is because of its unique adaptations a very unique animal in that it can survive in cold water and has unique adaptations that other sea turtles don't have, which is why we see it in the cold waters of the California Current here off our coast. As you heard before, there has been a 95% decline conferred by the National Marine Fisheries Service in the last 20 years. There used to be 4 major breeding areas for leatherbacks throughout the Pacific. 2 of those have been completely extirpated. There's only 2 left, one in Costa Rica and one in Indonesia. And the one in Indonesia is the one that comes to our waters. So this is a species that has not shown any sign of recovery yet based on this. The top scientists from the IATTC, an international body dealing with international longline fisheries, Peter Dutton, a NOAA expert at the National Marine Fisheries Service, and Larry Crowder have all made strong public statements that even one leatherback, every single leatherback matters. Even one is too much, given the dire state that these things are in and the fact that they're on the brink of extinction. Larry Crowder estimates there's a 50% chance these species will actually be extinct in the Pacific within 11 to 12 years. And just understanding just a bit about the life cycle, I won't go into the whole life cycle of sea turtles, but the important thing to note is that most of the conservation focus recently, until recently, was on protecting nesting beaches and the eggs. And what scientists have recently found is that the reproductive value of adults, that is the mortality caused by the high sea on the high seas by at-sea mortality, is really the sensitive spot in as far as the population growth and the dynamics of sea turtles. And that's something to point out, that really the ongoing threat that exists now is the bycatch on high seas. I passed out a copy of this report that I was the author of for Oceana that you've all seen. This is a map from it, really just showing that these turtles do migrate all over the ocean, but the U.S. West Coast really is a hot spot. It's not like these things are going all over the place, but they're really focusing and concentrating because of the unique jellyfish and plankton populations that we have off the U.S. West Coast. They're really the West Coast of the U.S. off California is really an important ecological area. This is just an example. You've heard the study mentioned earlier from NOAA that documented just a high level of leatherbacks off specific California waters. And I guess I'll just wrap up by showing that you can see these turtles. They're on their way here right now, and some of them have actually arrived already. And you can see the tracks that leatherbacks from Indonesia are taking on the way to our waters right now if you look at the website from the TOP program. So I'll conclude with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chester. Yes. Your name for the record?
Megan Jeans with the Ocean Conservancy.
Right. How much time of the 15?
I can make it quick to 3 minutes. In addition to some of these concerns you've been hearing about on the regarding the impacts on leatherback turtles and other protected species, we also have concerns that this proposed EFP permit is likely to impact several non-target fish species that have been listed, sharks being one of them. Sharks are characterized by their slow growth, their late maturity, and their low productivity, which makes them particularly vulnerable to overfishing. Great whites, despite their vicious reputation, they are apex predators and keystone species in the California current marine ecosystem. Their survival really is pivotal to the health and diversity of the California current marine ecosystem. They're currently listed as endangered. They're also on the Convention on International Trade of Endangered Species, Appendix 2, listed species. The draft environmental assessment actually indicates that there are a large number of great whites in the proposed area for this exempted fishing permit, and so the likelihood of interaction is great. In addition, the state of California has prohibited great white catch since 1995. Basking sharks, likewise, are also vulnerable to overfishing and interactions with longline gear. They've been categorized as vulnerable throughout its range and endangered in the North Pacific region. Tuna species, even though this shallow set longline fishery is intended to target swordfish and thresher sharks, or just swordfish rather, tuna are also identified as a major non-target species that are likely to interact. Albacore, yellowfin, big eye, skipjack, and bluefin are among those identified. However, albacore, yellowfin, and big eye, those three have either been identified as overfished or experiencing overfishing by stock assessment scientists both in the U.S. and internationally. What's more, some of the species that have identified as non-target fish species for the longline fishery have important recreational value, striped marlin being one of them. Their population right now is of major concern. It's at its lowest recorded biomass, and it's continuing to decline. Right now, commercial take of striped marlin or targeted intentional take is prohibited, and the International Scientific Committee for Tuna and Tuna-like Species actually recommends significant reductions in mortality. Before I go on, one additional comment I wanted to make had to do with, and this was referenced by the staff, has to do with the design flaws inherent in this exempted fishing permit application. We definitely support the goal of investigating ways to fish more selectively. However, okay, I would just like to say that yesterday, you might be aware that that NIMS denied a similar EFP application, which would have authorized longline vessels targeting swordfish in the Southeast Atlantic to fish in a closed area. And the agency justified its rejection of the permit on the grounds that this proposal did not include a scientifically rigorous study design. Likewise, this EFP, as NIMS has acknowledged in its response to the commission staff's questions, as well, and the Scientific and Statistical
Jeans,
Committee.
You're really eating into
okay.
the
brother. I'm sorry, I'll wrap it up. Basically, our concern is that this is not realistically designed to achieve its end goals. One vessel fishing for one season is not going to yield statistically significant results upon which to determine whether or not a longline fishery is viable. I'll turn it over to Brendan Cummings.
Thank you. You have 4 minutes and 42 seconds left, and there's three speakers, Jim Curlin and Brendan Cummings, Todd Steiner.
Okay.
So how much time are you going to take?
All of it? I'll speak for the...
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. Thank you for contributing that.
The previous speakers have highlighted the resources that are affected here, why we care, and what's at stake. What I'll try to do really briefly is explain why it's illegal, and more specifically, why it's inconsistent with the Coastal Act. The staff report and the staff presentation are very thorough and outline this. I'll be as quick as possible. The two primary provisions impacted are 30230, which talks about protecting species of special biological or economic significance and areas of special biological significance. Similarly, Section 30240 protects habitat areas that are sensitive. As we've gone over, there's numerous species. that are will be impacted by this permit. The ones highlighted are the ones that NIMS acknowledges are likely to be caught and are killed in this. The other species are ones that other longline fisheries have been known to interact with. Of the two areas of special significance, the Pacific Leatherback Conservation Area was designated as an effective bycatch reduction strategy. It delineates a particular area off the California coast that recent science has reiterated and reaffirmed is the most important area identified so far for foraging leatherback turtles in the North Pacific. You know, ideally there are other areas out there, but this is the one we know exists, and the leatherbacks are here from the population that is critical to keeping this species alive. The permit was amended to eliminate direct impacts on the marine sanctuaries. However, we believe it still adversely affects sanctuary resources because the turtles migrating through the fishing zone do go to the sanctuaries. As the staff mentioned, this commission previously passed a resolution affirming the support for conservation of sea turtles. And in that resolution, this commission explicitly recognized the threat that longline fishing poses to sea turtles. There's been a lot of talk about how we need this permit for enhancing fisheries to maintain our ability to keep a seat at the table in international negotiations, things of that sort. We see several problems and inconsistencies with Coastal Act provisions regarding fisheries. Significant interactions with recreational fish species, which is why the recreational sport fishing groups have almost uniformly opposed this, as well as it impacts other commercial fisheries. We have a harpoon fishery in California that produces swordfish to market with zero bycatch. State law was passed to protect that harpoon fishery as well as these recreational fishing resources. Those state laws are still on the books that prohibit longlining in California and landing of longline caught fish caught within the EEZ. As Megan mentioned, this permit will not produce scientifically valid results on bycatch unless they. So even if you accept the goal, which is with certain caveats we do, that gear experiments and finding solutions, the win-win solutions on how to reduce bycatch while maintaining.
Should we speak into the microphone, please?
Okay, sorry about that. Even if we accept the paradigm that longline fisheries will continue and we need to find solutions that reduce bycatch of turtles and other species. Something, the key point to that is that any such experiments to do that should be done in a manner that generate usable results and are done in places that do not place particularly sensitive species at risk. California is the most important known habitat, foraging habitat for Pacific leatherbacks in the North Pacific. This area is critical to the survival of the species. Leatherbacks there currently experience zero fisheries mortality. Allowing this permit to go forward will put leatherbacks at risk, will likely kill individual leatherbacks, and even if they achieve their goal, which is to introduce a full-scale longline fishery in California, you extrapolate that bycatch, it becomes at levels that's clearly unsustainable. The final point, as the staff mentioned, we really shouldn't even be here today because NIMS has, in its rush to approve this permit, has totally short-circuited the provisions of the Coastal Zone Management Act and is pursuing this as a federal agency activity rather than a federal permitted activity. As OCRM said, NIMS's consistency determination was not valid. That's an explicit line from their letter. Final statement, the staff report recommends that this be denied because of insufficient information from NIMS. We agree with that, but we also agree the commission has before it sufficient information to know that allowing longline fishing in the area that leatherbacks occur in off California is incompatible with the Coastal Act. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. And again?
And these are the groups that have spoken out in opposition to longlining, as well as various members of Congress and the public.
Thank you very much. Again, I'm asking members that if you've, not to be redundant, if you can take less than 3 minutes, we still have several slips here and we're going to lose a quorum. Shane Wolf. And after that, Kathy Fossmark. And Tim Eisenberg.
Okay.
Eichenberg.
Okay.
Yes, how much time?
3 minutes, please. Thank you very much for this opportunity to comment. My name is Shay Wolf. I'm a seabird biologist. I did my PhD research at UC Santa Cruz studying seabird populations along the U.S. the West Coast, the U.S., and also had the opportunity to work on North Pacific albatross that are highly impacted by longlining, including black-footed albatross, laysan albatross, and did population modeling for short-tailed albatross. And I strongly oppose the permitting of longlining along the EEZ of the U.S. Longlining has been well documented as a significant threat to seabird species and has contributed to numerous seabird population declines. And albatross, as you've heard, are particularly vulnerable to longlining because they get caught on hooks and drowned. And most albatross species worldwide are declining. And one of the biggest threats to those species worldwide is longlining, is mortality from longlining. And three albatross species that are really vulnerable to longlining that use our California and Oregon waters are black-footed albatross, laysan albatross, and short-tailed albatross. And black-footed albatross regularly use our coastal waters for foraging from February through November. And if you go out into our sanctuaries, you know, Monterey Bay, Gulf of the Farallones, Cordell Bank, you're going to see high densities often of black-footed albatross. And they're listed as endangered by the World Conservation Union because they've experienced such heavy losses from longlining, including projected 60% population decline over three generations, which is really alarming. Laysan albatross are vulnerable. And what's really important is that there are small populations in northern Baja California, and telemetry data has documented that they almost exclusively use our California and Oregon waters for foraging. So opening longlining in their foraging range is very problematic. And finally, for albatross, the short-tailed albatross is federally endangered. There are tiny populations. They're starting to increase. They use these waters, and so the potential for interactions between short-tailed albatross and longlining isn't going to increase as those populations start to get a little bit of a footing. And also very important is that we have several really vulnerable shearwater species, seabird species, that use our waters as critical foraging habitat. And they're really hard hit because these guys can dive very deeply and get an access bait, access bait even after the hooks have been set. So as an example, sooty shearwaters come all the way from New Zealand and can dive up to 70 meters. Black-vented shearwaters dive up to 52 meters, so certainly in the range of the shallow-set longlines, of the hooks of the shallow-set longlines. And in addition, we have many other seabird species. And in response to the proposal to NITESET, activity loggers on shearwaters and albatross have shown that those birds actually are active at night, so active, after dusk or before dawn, so there's a potential for interaction.
Ms. Wolf.
So finally, I just really urge you to oppose the proposed EFP in agreement with the staff's recommendations, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf. Kathy Fossmark, and then Tim Eichenberg, and then Virginia Hanley. Again, whatever you can do to help us here. Yes, how much time, ma'am?
My name is Kathy Fossmark, and I'm here today to represent myself, although I am on the Pacific Fishery Management Council that is tasked with oversight of regulations for fisheries for National Marine Fisheries Service. What our council passed this. The state of California voted against it as a policy decision, although I must say that the 5 years that this was in front of the Pacific Council through that process, tens of thousands of dollars was spent to make sure that we complied with all the needed guidelines for Endangered Species Act. We put caps of one on everything, and the fishery that they're going to engage in is one vessel using mackerel bait, circle hooks to avoid bycatch of species of concern. We have 10 years of data in the drift gillnet fishery, which I happen to be part of. We have two vessels in our family that fish drift gillnets. I have a lot of experience. I know the coastal communities that rely on swordfish. 80% of the fish are imported from countries that don't have regulations. We take observers on our vessels. This particular fishery is going to have 100% observer coverage. I find it surprising that at the 11th hour, some groups are involved in a campaign to close this process down. This is a process that was put in place by the federal government to allow us to test and to make sure we can find better ways of fishing and excluding any interaction with endangered species that was brought to you today. I found some of the information to be erroneous. Even the drawing of the hooks, if they were that close on the line, they would have tangled in your drawing there. I sit on the take reduction team. I also want to mention that we have the studies going on with tagging turtles out of Moss Landing Marine Lab, which we're working with. Office of Protected Species has given this total scrutiny. The advisory panels, the Science and Statistical Committee, the Highly Migratory Species Advisory Panel, and the team have all looked at this and given it a pass. I urge you to take and think about how important this is to the economy of California. I also want to mention that the longline fishery for halibut, which is internationally managed, is considered one of the most sustainable fisheries in the world. They're using the same style of gear, and I think we should approve this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you for your testimony. Tim Eichenberg, and then Virginia Hanley, and then Katie Taylor. How much time, sir?
Just 30 seconds.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Tim Eichenberg. I'm the director of the Pacific Office of the Ocean Conservancy, but I'm speaking today on behalf of the Billfish Foundation, which submitted a letter to the commission, which I hope you have in your files. In addition to agreeing with the speakers today that they would like to see experimentation to try to reduce bycatch and make fishing gear more sustainable, doing it in a leatherback conservation zone just does not make any sense. Their letter, I'll paraphrase because in the interest of time, they also point out that there's a number of species that are targeted in this fishery that are currently overfished, such as yellowfin and big-eye tuna, that there's no formal stock assessment for Pacific swordfish or striped marlin, which were also taken in this fishery, and therefore they support the staff recommendation and urge you to find that this fishing permit is inconsistent with the California Coastal Act.
Thank you, sir. Virginia Hanley? How much time, ma'am?
5 seconds. Virginia Hanley, Animal Switchboard. I just want to concur and support the statements that have already been given in opposition to the permit.
Thank you, Ms. Hanley. Katie Taylor? Kate Taylor? And Arlene Sen? And Veronica Raymond?
I'll need 3 minutes, but I'll try to be as brief as possible. My name is Kate Taylor, and I'm here on behalf of the American Albacore Fishing Association. I have a letter that I would like to read for them. The American Albacore Fishing Association is a nonprofit corporation of over 24 American commercial fishing vessels that participate in the North Pacific albacore fishery. I am here to express their concerns for the exempt fishing permit application, which presently seeks to reestablish a longline fishery off the coast of California. More particularly, this concern regards the recognition that albacore, while not specifically targeted, is acknowledged to be a major non-target species and likely to comprise retained incidental catch. In recent years, the Inter-American Tropical Tuna Commission and the Western and Central Pacific Fisheries Commission have adopted resolutions which require member nations to cap current levels of effort with respect to North Pacific albacore. The American Albacore Fishing Association is wholly supportive of efforts directed toward ensuring that the long-term sustainability of North Pacific albacore stock, along with the sustained participation of the coastal fishing communities and their long history of interdependence with the West Coast fleet. This includes cooperation in scientific data gathering. However, as it stands, this EFP is not reasonably designed to provide data which is either statistically nor scientifically significant. The EFP in question does not establish significant controls for the reduction elimination of bycatch of albacore and does not provide bycatch limitations for albacore in accordance with the international resolutions and accepted sustainability fishery practices. Prior to the grant of the EFP, the scale, scope, and potential impacts of full-scale longline fishery in California and adjacent waters should be thoroughly considered. Such consideration must take into account how albacore and other non-target bycatch will be addressed within the context of annual catch level requirements of the 2006 amendments to the Magnuson-Stevenson Act. On behalf of AAFA and its members, I greatly appreciate having the opportunity to comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Arlene Sen, Veronica Raymond. How much time, ma'am, are you requesting?
Say 3 minutes. It'll be less than 3 minutes,
okay.
I'm sure.
Okay. Thank you.
My name is Arlene Sen, and I'm asking you to oppose the granting of a long line permit. It's well documented that long lines have killed marine mammals, fish species, birds, and leatherneck turtles. And the permit would be an opening for breaking the essential ban on long line fishing in California. In addition, what I want to address is the concept that businesses have a right to work in the easiest way for them is very dangerous. I have had to change the way I work. I've chosen to change the way I work also in many areas, especially in construction, in order to protect community health and the environment. Now, sometimes it's more trouble and it's less profit for me, but my small business does not come before the community health and the environment. And I realize this first permit is about a small business, but ultimately the concept that business has a right to do business the easiest way for them has led to endangering our world, the animals, and the oceans. So please oppose a permit for long lines.
Thank you, ma'am. Veronica Raymond. Then Miyoka Shashika. Oh.
3 minutes. I'm Vice President of Action Now. We're a grassroots citizen group against the misuse of pesticides and any chemical assault on the environment. But today I'd like to address you as a third grade teacher. While teaching science...
Your name for the record, please.
My name? Veronica Raymond?
Yes, for the record. Thank you.
Okay. But today I'd like to address you as a third grade teacher. While teaching science, I use the recommended California science curriculum and textbooks. This consists of three units. The first unit is called The Survival of Living Things. The children study plants, animals, and ecosystems. This unit culminates with statements in our textbook that laws protect animals endangered of becoming extinct. It doesn't say sometimes, maybe, or if it's convenient or profitable. Today's issue is a complex one with no easy answer, but I urge you to not issue this permit for long line fishing. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Miyoka Shashisha.
My concerns with the EFP have been sufficiently discussed.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much. Adam Keats.
I'll waive my time also. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mike Perlmutter.
I'll also waive my time.
Thank you very much. And Tom Rafkin.
And I'll be brief.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Tom Raftigan, President of United Anglers of Southern California. We represent about 40,000 recreational fishermen throughout California. Going back about 17 years ago, we went to the California Fish and Game Commission and asked them to prohibit longline fishing off of pelagic longline fishing off of California. And actually, after an ongoing dialogue, they agreed, but it was interesting. They didn't prohibit longline fishing off California. They prohibited the landing of longline caught fish that were caught within the 200-mile EEZ. Brendan Cummings touched upon this before. Interestingly enough, Fish and Game Code 8110 to 8114, offshore declarations, and Code 9028 and 9029 are still in effect. So those prohibitions for landing longline caught tuna, or longline caught fish caught within the 200 miles from shore, are still basically in place in California. And if you're looking at a consistency determination, you should probably be consistent with California state law. And we'd like to see you do that. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony here today. With that, I'll go back for Mr. Helvey, the applicant, for his 3 minutes rebuttal time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not the we're not the applicant. We're in support of the applicant. There's been a lot.
I thought you were the applicant. That's what.
No, sir. It's Mr. Dupuy.
It's consistency. Okay.
There's been a lot said in the last several minutes, last half hour or so. I'm not going to try to address those. A lot of them are technical issues. I think the debate will go on for quite a while. I think what's important here is the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is 70 to 80% of the swordfish coming into the United States is coming in from imports. We don't know how that fish is caught. We don't know what type of regulatory controls are imposed. We do know that in Hawaii, in off the Atlantic coast, and in this proposed application, that very tight controls would be applied. Caps would be placed for particular species, protective species. The commission has an opportunity before them. There's a fisherman here who is willing to take the economic risk to go out and see if he can find a more conservative way to land swordfish. We think that any way that brings in swordfish in a more conservative way is the way to proceed. The agency has spent a lot of time and a lot of research on coming up with gear technologies that reduce bycatch and the survivability of that bycatch. And those safeguards would be implemented in this proposed EFP. The last thing on statistical validation. With the political climate, I think it's realistic to understand that any thought of putting out more vessels at this time to come up with some scientific rigor is just not realistic. And this is an opportunity for one man to go out and see if his gear can land the targeted species he's focusing on and can do it in a way that protects the environment. I thank the commission for its time.
Thank you, Mr. Halvey. Thank you for your testimony. With that, I'll return to staff for response.
I believe Mr. Dupuy wants some rebuttal time.
Okay. The applicant is still. We have. Let me have clarification from counsel here, because I thought the applicant is already. We gave them 3 minutes. Do I give them part of? Yeah.
Yes. What the commission is reviewing today is a consistency determination that has been submitted by NMFS. So for the purposes of this proceeding, NMFS is the applicant, but the chair has discretion on this.
Okay, matter. I will be happy to give you a minute. Go ahead. There are 2 minutes. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Can you put that on the screen, please? For the last, these are my records. First of all, there's a lot of things that were said here today. That's old information. Things have been changed. I am fishing with new gear. I want you to understand that. All my gear is new. The record I'm giving here you today, I've been holding confidential. I wouldn't let NMFS put it out because it's my records. But this has been certified 100% federal observer coverage on these fisheries. It's 2.5 years of fishing, close to 200,000 hooks, 200,000 hooks set. No birds, no turtles, no mammals, very low bycatch of anything. You can see the numbers. Again, there was 100% observer coverage on these trips. This was done in the Eastern Pacific. The problem... I've heard all this stuff that you heard today. It's taken me years to sort it out, years to bring it to the table, and years to examine these things that everybody has said. I can't start again. I can't start all over again. I'm tired. I proved to Nance I can do it. The proof is right here in front of me, and it's in front of you people too. That document is real. It's not hearsay. It's not something they read 10 years ago that somebody wrote. That's what's happening today. It says April 2007 was the last hook I put in the water.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. And with that, we'll go to staff. And Mr. Delplane, do you want to start?
A couple of comments. Just a reminder, the motion's on page 7. One thing that we didn't discuss, but NMFS made a point in our meetings, and I think it's worth mentioning, is that while harpoon fishing for swordfish reduces bycatch problems, it does result in increased fuel use. So there are some trade-offs involved in that. The issue about the leatherback conservation area being only applicable to the drift gillnet, that's the fishery for which it was adopted. Since there isn't a longline fishing, we don't know if NMFS would adopt a similar conservation area for a longline fishery within the EEZ. It's certainly quite likely that they would, in our opinion, but we just don't know the answer to that. And again, as they mentioned, they haven't designated critical habitat, so we don't have that information as well. We mentioned in our earlier presentation that the conservation area is almost fully within the exempted fishing permit area. I just want to point out that we're only looking at California when we say that. We didn't request permission to review activities offshore of Oregon, and we're not making comments on what happens offshore of Oregon. The comments from Mr. LaGrange about whether or not California has ever allowed longline fishing, we did receive his information, and we did put it in the staff report. It's in a footnote on page 6 that while NMFS had given us the information we had used, we pointed out that there are folks that, and there have been a couple of experimental fisheries permits allowed by the Department of Fish and Game, but extremely few. I just want to clarify the Environmental Center for Biological Diversity comments indicating reliance on Section 302.30 and Section 302.40. We're looking at Section 302.30 under our review. Section 302.40 is usually used by the Commission when looking at sensitive habitats on land.
Okay, is that the extent of your comments? Okay, that I'll come back for the Commission for deliberations. Commissioner Wan?
I move that the Commission concur with consistency determination CD04107 and determine that the project described therein is fully consistent and thus is consistent to the maximum extent practical with the enforceable policies of the California Coastal Management Program and recommend a no vote.
Is there a second to Commissioner Wan's?
I second the motion.
Seconded by Commissioner Blank. Commissioner Wan, would you like to speak to your motion?
Yes. Before I do, though, I did want to ask Commissioner Baird about the Department of Fish and Game's position on this one.
Yes. In the early 1990s, the Fish and Game Commission granted some commercial fishermen an experimental permit for the use of long lines to target certain species of shark, as one of the gentlemen mentioned today. Unfortunately, during that experiment, apparently the experience was a lot of blue sharks, which are not the target species, were caught as bycatch. As a result, the Fish and Game Commission took the position that they did not want this practice to continue. What's happened since that policy position has been put forth on the part of the Fish and Game Commission, the state representative who is with the Department of Fish and Game, who is before the council, has consistently voted against the issuance of long-line permits based on this experience in California. So that is where what the state has said in this process, which we participate in with the Pacific Fishery Management Council.
Commissioner Warren.
Thank you. I don't know where to begin. I'm always amazed by some of the proposals that come in front of us. All over the world, there are calls for scientists, by scientists, to end longline fishing. More than 600 scientists from 54 countries have now signed a petition urging the United Nations to impose a moratorium on longline fishing in the Pacific, and that's from a news article. And we're going ahead and asking to allow it to occur in waters where it's already banned. Arguably, longline fishing may be marginally better than drift gillnet fishing. I'm not sure of that because it depends on the species that you're looking at, frankly. Both of these forms of fishing create significant bycatch, but different species are affected. Frankly, we've been less than successful at managing our fish stocks and stocks of marine mammals and turtles and seabirds, since with the exception of a few species of marine mammals, most of these stocks have been plummeting. For birds, particularly albatross, long-line fishing is horrific. There are 21 species of albatross in the world. 19 are threatened or highly endangered. And one of the principal reasons for that is long-line fishing. For turtles, long-line fishing is probably, as you saw, the It's arguable whether drift gill net fishing or longline fishing is better. They're both terrible. And for mammals, it's argued by NIMS that longline fishing is slightly better. But frankly, when I read the statistics and the way they're playing games with the statistics, I'm not sure about that. Before I go on to some of those statistics, I do have to, I have to comment on something because there's a statement in this document by NIMS. It is a NIMS resource conclusion states that when combined with existing known threats to these stocks, such as ship strikes, exposure to toxins, pollutants, loss of habitat or prey, and underwater sound, it is not expected that the proposed action will change the status of these species or trigger concern over the stocks. To begin with, I noticed that they don't list global warming as a threat. But for 2 years, I worked on a federal committee dealing with sound and constantly was told by NIMS, don't deal with underwater sound. It's irrelevant because it's insignificant with respect to bycatch. Now I pick up a document and it says, don't deal with bycatch because it's insignificant with regards to underwater sound. That doesn't leave me a lot of faith in the kind of statistics that they're giving me. And when I analyze this, it says they don't expect the take of any endangered species other than leatherbacks. But it really ignore the issue of short-finned pilot whales and some of the marine mammal species. They say that it's okay in response to commission staff's question about the short-finned pilot whale. They say it's okay. Well, you know, over the last 5 years, there's only been 5 killed off our waters, and if we lose another one this year, that's 6. So that brings the average to 1.2 per year. And but according to the 2007 PBR, that's the potential biological removal level, it's now set at 0.98, not 1.2. And so they're going to allow the killing of the species. And for those of you who don't know, PBR means that when you take a species at that level, it is a significant impact on the population of that species and could result in extinction. Okay? Other whales, they say they don't expect to take them, because the numbers will be small, but they don't say how they arrive at that, and they don't conclusion, and they don't put a cap on it. So if you say it's going to be small and you put a cap on it, that's one thing. But if you don't put a cap on it, then your conditions are inappropriate. Do we consider that killing one blue whale is acceptable? I don't think so. And I also might add that this commission deals with all species, not just listed ones. Everything here has been put in terms of listed species. But our standard of review, we're reviewing this under the CZMA and the CCMP. And our standard of review are the policies of the Coastal Act, which goes beyond protecting just listed species. And I won't read all of Section 302.30 to you, but it says that uses of the marine environment shall be carried out in a manner that will sustain the biological productivity of coastal waters that will maintain healthy populations of all species of marine aquatic organisms. That's why this commission is so important for us to review this, so that we can look at this thing from an ecosystem perspective. Frankly, this doesn't have the basic elements of what is called a scientific experiment. This is not going to provide us with data that is usable, and it's not going to be statistically significant because the EFP is not taking place in an area where drift gillnet fishing occurs. It will not be possible to compare bycatch rates between the two. I'm just wondering why this is necessary anyway. Bycatch data we've got bycatch data for longline fishing vessels, and that had been collected for a long time. And you've heard that they're doing it in Hawaii. Why do we need this? As far as the use...
Sir, we're going to have to ask you to be quiet while the commission's deliberating. We'd really appreciate it.
I'm very sorry. I've seen people ask that.
Why don't you listen to the commission while they deliberate, okay? We appreciate that courtesy. Thank you.
The difference between non-circle hook and circle hook for gear used in California, Hawaii yielded, for non-circle hook, it was 76% bycatch. For circle hook, it was 60% bycatch. This data shows that longlining, even with gear modifications, is not a selective gear type and indiscriminately captures more than just swordfish. So we already know it's not acceptable. Our staff has done a good job of asking the questions, but frankly, I have a couple of additional questions. One, first of all, if you're interested in reducing bycatch, why are you allowing the use of nightsticks? They may increase the yield of swordfish, but they attract other species, particularly turtles. And why are you not employing other methods of reducing bycatch beyond the circle hooks, such as those recommended by BirdLife International, as it affects birds? Because, frankly, that's a very serious problem with longline. Streamers, for example, that are set during the line set, which is the most dangerous time for most species of birds, not all species. We heard that some species are nocturnal. But I don't see why that's not being employed. Why there are other issues that and other methods of reducing bycatch that are also not being required. Okay, and as far as the responses from NIMS, I went through this document very carefully last night. Okay, and frankly, you answer some of the questions. But as for the questions and the responses to the questions that deal with how this is a scientific experiment that's going to yield effective information, frankly, your responses were non-responses. I mean, they're totally inadequate. And you don't deal with the issue of short fin pilot whales properly. You don't deal with the way in which why you take the statements that you don't anticipate the take of any ESA-listed species other than leatherbacks, et cetera. And you said, relative to question 11, NIMS has no information to suggest what degree of leatherback take and mortality will occur. That doesn't answer the question. Number 12, again, you don't answer the question, why this area? Why are you doing this test in this area rather than in an area that's off limits to drift gillnet fishing and is so critically important to this species? Why are you doing it where you know leatherback turtles are going to occur? And frankly, I find the arguments about foreign fisheries unacceptable. We have to do what is necessary to protect our fishing stocks here. And it's no excuse to say, well, others are doing it, so we need to do it as well. Frankly, it's time to stop waging war on our oceans. Life originated in the sea. The sea sustains life. And when it dies, so will we.
Thank you, Commissioner Wan. Seconder of the motion, Commissioner Blank, would you like to speak to your motion?
I would, and I will try to be a little briefer than Commissioner Wan. And I'll just confine my observations to one is I'm voting no because of the issues that the staff raised. But I just want to say in addition my apologies to the applicant or the fisherman. I think you were poorly served by the Marine Fisheries Service in this case, who normally does a spectacular job. But this was presented as a science experiment, but sounded like a commercial fishing operation. And for me, that just created too much cognitive dissonance. I would have expected from National Marine Fisheries, if it was a scientific exploration, some science in the presentation. But here's what we want to accomplish. Here's our goals. And therefore, we're allowing a commercial fisherman to do that. I didn't get that from any of the data I read or the presentation. That just for me was not only an objection, but the final nail in the coffin. So, therefore, my no vote.
Thank you, Commissioner Blank. Commissioner Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two comments.
One is, in listening to Zeke Rader, who I've known for many years, have great respect for, his primary point was of the benefit of this was to be able to have experiments that look at different gear with different outcomes, and I appreciate that perspective. It seems to me that the same could be accomplished with the current permits that are operating off Hawaii and other places, so I'm not sure why it would take this particular project to do that gear experimental work when you already have longline fishermen out there with other permits. The second thing is this chart that we were given, as I look at it, 05 to 07, it appears to me that over 80% of the catch here is tuna, so I'm assuming that this is more deep water catch than it is the kind of applications before us today. So I'm not quite sure how this pertains to the issue before us.
Sir, we can't take any more testimony right now. The commission is still ready. Yeah, I'd please ask your courtesy to please refrain right now. We're deliberating. I appreciate it. Any other commissioners that want to weigh in? If not, we do have a motion by Maker and the seconder are asking for a no vote, which means that if this passes, this will motion will fail and will result in the objection to the determination, and it will adopt the resolutions and findings as contained in the staff report. Okay. Any others? Questions? If not, would the clerk call the roll? The maker and seconder are asking for a no vote.
Commissioner Chajan? Commissioner Blank?
No.
Commissioner Wessel?
No.
Commissioner Potter?
No.
Commissioner Riley?
No.
Commissioner Schellenberger?
No.
Commissioner Wan?
No.
Chair Kruer?
No. It's unanimous, no vote, which means the motion hereby the commission objects to the consistency determination by the service for this proposed project. Thank you. We have one more item here that the...
Thank you, yes. Commissioners Christina Cairns will present her first presentation before the commission in the Energy and Ocean Resources Unit.
Good morning, Commissioners. If there are no speaker slips, then in the interest of time, I will proceed in giving you a brief presentation. As you can see, we initially recommended a conditional concurrence, but in the last document in the addendum we prepared, we have revised that to a straight concurrence for this project, which is CD 03707, U.S. Coast Guard Sector San Diego Proposed Pier Project. The proposed project is the construction of a 242-foot-long pier and floating dock at the Harbor Drive facility, located adjacent to an existing Coast Guard pier in the northwest corner of San Diego Bay, just south of San Diego International Airport. The new pier will be used to berth large Coast Guard patrol vessels and additional U.S. Customs and Border Protection vessels, formerly docked at the Ballast Point mooring site at the west entrance of San Diego Bay. This project will result in the relocation of smaller U.S. Coast Guard vessels, including search and rescue boats, from the Harbor Drive facility to the western entrance site. This will allow the Coast Guard to reduce their emergency response time for search and rescue and improve mission operations in the greater San Diego area. In evaluating the project, staff has analyzed several issues associated with construction of the pier, mainly impacts to marine resources in the area. The primary concerns were impacts to California lease terns, which have a nesting colony just north of the project site, and who forage in the adjacent bay waters, as well as eelgrass beds that will be partially covered by the grading of a fixed pier. Mitigation measures were proposed by the Coast Guard, including avoiding construction during the lease tern breeding season, and additional measures were recommended by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, such as lease tern predator controls. These measures were outlined in a letter we recently received from Fish and Wildlife supporting the Coast Guard's assessment that the proposed project is not likely to adversely affect least terns and brown pelicans. To mitigate any impacts to the eelgrass beds in the project area, the Coast Guard has agreed to conduct monitoring surveys immediately pre- and post-construction and mitigate any impacts at a 1.2 to 1 ratio. Staff also requested, and the Coast Guard has now agreed to include, an additional post-construction survey of the eelgrass community 1 year after project completion, included as the condition on page 5 of the staff report. With the above measures, the staff believes the Coast Guard has adequately addressed relevant concerns and that the project meets the requirements for a consistency determination under the Coastal Zone Management Act. If the Commission prefers any details on the project or any of the above issues or otherwise, we are here and prepared to provide you with more information.
Okay, fine. Thank you for your presentation.
Okay.
Chairman Cook,
I just want to mention that the motion is in the addendum for, there's an addendum for about 5 items, and it's the last part of the addendum for items.
Do you just drop off the word conditionally? Is it the same motion? You just drop off conditionally?
You take out conditionally, and you take out if modified in accordance with the condition below.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Ex parties starting on my left. No ex parties. We have no speaker slips. Commissioner Wessel.
Yes, I move that the commission concur with the consistency determination CD-03707 that the project described therein would be fully consistent and thus consistent to the maximum extent practicable with the enforceable policies of the California Coastal Management Program.
Is there a second?
And recommend a yes vote.
Second. Moved by Commissioner Wessel, second by Commissioner Potter. The maker and seconder asking for a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in the agreement with the determination and the adoption of the resolutions and findings contained in the staff report. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the commission hereby concurs with the consistency determination CD-037-07 by the United States Coast Guard. Okay? That was the last item. Is there anything else, Dr. Lester, before we adjourn and see everybody in Eureka?
Just that we're looking forward to Eureka. There are a couple events planned, and including a field trip up to Ferndale on Thursday for your information.
Great. Any other commissioners? Anybody wants to say anything before we close it? No, thank you. Thank you very much, and we'll close today's hearing.
Who was there?
See you, my friend, always.
As always, you did a great job.
Love. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Have a good trip back.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Peter's having this test the camera.
Yeah.
have everything. Yes, hold on here. Yeah, that these are all. I told Peter, I don't have any problem.
Okay.
But my biggest problem is making sure I can do it.
Right. It's always hard over the weekends.
Yeah.
At least for me.
It's
easier for me to, you know, where you're sitting.
Hello. Back to the office. Yeah,
all right, I'll
Wrapping up here, and I gotta pick up something to eat, but then I'll be over. So, oh, that's okay. Yeah, not today. All right, I'll see you in a bit. Bye.